A logo appears in bold, slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now in a black-and-white film, titles appear in calligraphy letters. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Mutiny on the Bounty. Copyright 1935. Starring Charles Laughton as Captain Bly and Clark Gable as Fletcher Christian. With Franchot Tone, Herbert Mundin, Eddie Quillen, Dudley Diggs, and Donald Crisp. A Frank Lloyd production. Associate producer Albert Lewin. Directed by Frank Lloyd. Screenplay by Talbot Jennings, Jules Firthman, and Carrie Wilson. From the book by Charles Nordoff and James Norman Hall. Music score by Herbert Stottbart. Recording director, Douglas Shearer. Art director, Cedric Gibbons. Associate, Arnold Gillespie. Marine director, James Havens. Photograph by Arthur Edison, ASC. Film editor, Margaret Booth. Now a foreword. In December 1787, HMS Bounty lay in Portsmouth Harbor on the eve of departure for Tahiti in the uncharted waters of the Great South Sea. The Bounty's mission was to procure breadfruit trees for transplanting to the West Indies as cheap food for slaves. Neither ship nor breadfruit reached the West Indies. Mutiny prevented it. Mutiny against the abuse of harsh 18th century sea law. But this mutiny, famous in history and legend, helped bring about a new discipline based upon mutual respect between officers and men, by which Britain's sea power is maintained as security for all who pass upon the seas. Words appear over a drawing of a ship. Portsmouth, England, 1787.
8 o'clock, all well, misty weather.
The town crier steps back as a Navy officer strides past, accompanied by men wearing wide-legged striped pants and dark cropped jackets. Outside a tavern, the officer signals the sailors to halt, then brings a stocky one with him to a window. They peer inside, where customers smoke clay pipes. A burly older man wearing an apron brings a pewter tankard to a young couple.
Hey, you're my lad.
Thank you.
The young man passes the tankard to his pretty wife. As she takes a sip, she notices the men looking in the window.
The Crab Cake!
The sailors storm in.
Give me that in the king's name!
The officer grins.
Well, we got all the fish we need in one net.
Line them up, bosun.
Aye, aye, sir. Line up there.
Lads, now you're next in wheat. You're in the King's Navy.
I'm no seaman, sir. I'm a tailor.
He has a tattoo.
What's that? Your needlework? No chin music.
What ship, sir?
The Bounty for the South Sea.
The South Sea?
Well, that's the end of the world.
No, this bosun sailed down there with Captain Cook. He knows all the little brown gals as gay as kiss me.
Who's the captain, sir?
Captain Bly.
Bly? Not him.
See him.
The young man.
How long will we be gone, sir?
Until there's enough white frost in hell to kill snap beans.
How long is that, sir? I've got to know.
2 years, lad.
Please, sir, you won't take my husband. When our baby was born, Tommy left the sea. He don't want to serve in the Navy. He don't.
It's true, sir, so help me.
I'm sorry, lad, but the king needs 6 men.
You can't take him, you can't. It's like forever.
I can't take them and not take him. Stop them going.
No, you Come can't on, take man. Him. I won't let you. It's 2 years. No.
Now in an elegant home.
This is England's new venture in science, in trade, in discovery. Who else but Sir Austin Byam's son should go?
For 2 years.
I understand, my dear.
Ship ahoy!
A young man bounds downstairs wearing an officer's uniform with white leggings. He grins.
Behold, the eldest son of the sea and heir to all its oceans. Uniform by Jeeves. It's so new it creaks. I'll come back an admiral with a necklace for you. Pearls as big as coconuts. I'll name a nice new shiny island after you, Sir Joseph. I owe you that for getting my appointment.
Young man, you've been appointed for one purpose, to make me a dictionary of the Tahitian language. I've made that clear to Captain Bly.
What's he like, sir?
Captain Bly? Oh, he's a seagoing disaster. His hair is rope yarn. His teeth are marlin spikes.
Marlin spikes? Good.
Sounds rather terrifying.
But perhaps, as your father used to say, a taut hand at sea is better than a slack one.
Ah, you'd have made a rare sailor, ma'am.
Why don't you stow away, Mother?
I've considered it very seriously. Well, here's to the voyage of the Bounty.
To the voyage of the Bounty. Still waters and a great golden sea. Flying fish like streaks of silver and mermaids that sing in the night. The Southern Cross and all the stars on the other side of the world.
Yes, my sir. To the voyage of the Bounty.
With a faraway gaze, young Roger raises his glass with Sir Joseph and his mother. Later, in a harbor, ships float at anchor. On one, sailors climb three towering masts, each taller than 100 feet. On shore, men load cargo into a dinghy. Roger Byam turns to one of the workmen.
Is that the Bounty?
No, sir. That's the flagship of the fleet. There's your little point, Butch.
That the Bounty for Tahiti? She isn't very big, is she?
It ain't the size that counts, youngster. It's the salt in the lead that matter.
Byam smiles broadly and grips the man's shoulder as he climbs into the small dinghy. On the Bounty, men and women crowd the 20-foot-wide deck. As the officer makes his way through the crowd, an attractive woman steps to his side.
Where's your sweetheart, handsome?
She married a sailor.
Oh.
Grinning, he goes below deck, where two sailors hold the young man from the tavern.
It's Ellison, sir. He tried to break ship. On deck, Morrison.
Aye,
Churchill.
Aye,
they leave. Christian grabs the front of Ellison's shirt.
Break ship, would you?
I can't face it, sir. Not 2 years. I might not come back. Then she's left with the baby. Flog me. Send me to jail, but don't take me, sir.
Now listen to me, Ellison. The sea's a hard half-acre, lad, but you whistle it off. You do your spit and polish, and you'll come home with the seals a-fall on you, all agog with admiration. I was like you when I first came to sea. Cumberland moss all over me. Now it's turned to barnacles.
Ellison smiles.
That's better. Now, on this voyage, if you get in trouble, come to me. I'll see that you get justice. But if you're wrong, look out for squalls. Now, get your chin up. Go on deck. Say goodbye to your wife.
Ellison gapes.
You've got her aboard, sir?
And the baby. Shake a leg.
Thank you, sir.
On deck with the burly man.
So you're going to the South Seas, Jack?
Aye.
Here, take this with you. You can buy your own island. 10 shillings.
10 shillings? I ain't seen the king's face on a shilling for so long. I've forgotten which George it is. But I'll take it, and I'll pay you when I get back, eh?
Sheriff, you're not coming back. Not in this little half-walnut.
He swipes a necklace as she leaves. Nearby, another peddler corners Byam and a woman.
With a map of the treasure under the works.
Here, stand clear with the tinware, Joe. And you there, keep the lower to the ship's young gentleman.
All right, nurse. That's all.
Byam?
Yes, sir.
I'm Fletcher Christian, acting lieutenant and master's mate.
Then you'll be my instructor.
Yes, in navigation, seamanship, and trigonometry. You'll be assigned to a watch, keep order among the men, go aloft to bend canvas, reef and furl. Otherwise, your time is your own.
Mr. Christian, in my hands, the ship is safe.
I understand. A little child shall lead them. Come along, I'll show you below. You there, take Mr. Byam's box to his berth.
Aye, sir.
An old officer with a peg leg and a bottle sits atop a load of cargo.
Ahoy, Mr. Christian!
Christian's cheeks dimple as he grins. He pushes aside the sailors gathered around the old man.
Good morning, sir.
The man drops his bottle.
Oh, nothing lost, Mr. Christian. Think I've got enough here for a 2 years' voyage?
Oh, you know your draft better than I do, sir.
My lad, nobody can estimate my draft. Least of all myself.
He reels.
What makes a roll, sir? Here's a navy for you. Rum in the skipper's today and blood in the skipper's tomorrow.
Mr. Byam, this is our ship surgeon. We call him Mr. Backus. He's never told us his real name.
I've forgotten it.
Pleased to meet you, sir.
Mr. Byam, I should never have gone ashore. England's only an island, and all islands are alike. I'm going below. Bear a hand.
Now Ellison stands with his wife and baby.
Oh, Tommy, I'm afeard. The ship's unlucky. They've changed the name.
Well, I changed your name, didn't I? Was that unlucky? Huh?
Oh, Tommy.
He kisses his son's tiny hand. Below deck, two officers stand in a small room.
One, two,
three of us in here? My dog at home has a bigger kennel all to himself. I can see we shall be as friendly as tomcats in a sack.
Christian appears.
Mr. Stewart, Mr. Byam.
Drop in any time, Mr. Byam. I shall be just 10 inches away from you.
A pleasure, Mr. Stewart.
I hope you'll like the ship, Mr. Byam.
I'd like any ship, Mr. Stewart.
Johnny Newcomer.
Oh, yes, Mr. Byam. The amiable Mr. Hayward.
How do you do?
Mr. Hayward has been 2 years at sea. And a man who has been 2 years at sea at least should know how to lash his hammock, Mr. Hayward. Yours looks like a Frenchman's knapsack. All right, on deck, all of you.
On deck with a short, weak-chinned man.
Mr. Maggs.
A sharp-faced man turns.
This here Captain Bligh, sir. Now, you being ship's clerk, would you be calling him a gentle officer?
If I was you, I wouldn't be calling him anything.
Oh, no, Mr. Maggs. No, never call anybody anything. Oh, but I do hope he is gentle, Mr. Maggs, because I'm his messman and I frighten so easy. It runs in our family, Mr. Maggs. My mother was frightened by my father before I was born, and I've been frightened ever since. Do you know, Mr. Maggs, there's times when I can hardly hold a glass in my hand.
Silence! The captain's coming aboard.
Oh, boat.
The men hurry to stand in formation. In the water, a launch bearing a flag pulls alongside a set of steps. A short man climbs up and strides onto the deck. Saluting the officers, he turns to the crew.
Mr. Christian, clear the decks of this rabble.
Very good, sir.
Clear decks. Everybody ashore.
Clear decks.
Mr. Pryor, we sail at 6 bells.
Sail at 6 bells, sir.
We got our rights here.
Off ship, Joe. Off ship.
I'm not going until the ship sails.
Christian throws him overboard. Bligh reads a letter.
Flogging through the fleet. We're included. Quite a compliment to the Bounty, Sir Joseph.
Yes.
Mr. Christian, fight the ship's company at 5 bells to witness punishment.
Very good, sir.
Would you care to see the flogging, Sir Joseph?
Good heavens, no. The only discipline I know is science.
Do you think there's no science in using a cat of nine tails? You should watch my bosun.
Oh, I really must be off. I came aboard merely to introduce Roger. Goodbye, my boy. This won't be all cakes and ale, Roger. But your family has followed the sea for 7 generations. Not one ever failed in his duty. In a tight place, that's all you need to remember.
I'll try to, sir.
Sure you will, my boy.
Goodbye, Mr. Bligh. Goodbye, Sir Joseph.
They shake hands. Roger Byam looks over Captain Bligh's shoulder at the flogging orders.
What does it mean, sir, flogging through the fleet? Sentence of court-martial, 2 dozen lashes at each ship of the fleet.
What was the man's crime, sir?
Struck his captain.
But that's over 300 lashes. I don't understand why...
Can you understand this, Mr. Byam? Discipline's the thing. A seaman's a seaman, a captain's a captain, and a midshipman, Sir Joseph or no Sir Joseph, is the lowest form of animal life in the British Navy.
Bligh, a short, portly man, strides away. Christian comes over.
Now you know what a midshipman is.
Byam blinks at him, then smiles. Later, a line of dinghies snakes among the anchored ships toward the Bounty. In each dinghy, 8 sailors row long, narrow-bladed oars. The first 2 boats draw alongside the Bounty.
Away! Then!
Officers stand in the first dinghy. In the second, a man slumps against a tripod of beams, his hands tied over his head.
Company, off hats!
The Bounty's men stand at attention as Bligh steps forward.
Article 22. If any officer, mariner, soldier, or other person in the fleet shall strike or offer to strike any of his superior officers, and being convicted of such offense, he shall suffer such punishment as shall be inflicted on him by the sentence of a court-martial.
Ship's company, on hats.
The officers don their broad hats.
Mr. Morrison, 2 dozen, I believe.
2 dozen it is, sir.
The sailor climbs down to the dinghy where the man hangs by his wrists, his back striped with lashes.
The man is dead, sir.
Dead?
Christian gazes down.
Shall I dismiss the men, sir?
What? Certainly not. We proceed with punishment. Bosun, do your duty.
On the dinghy, Morrison gapes at Bligh.
Come along with you. Do your duty.
Slowly, Morrison unfurls a cat-o'-nine-tails whip, then swings it at the man. On the Bounty, Ellison and the other sailors wince. Ellison's burly friend from the tavern glares at Bligh. Bligh gazes at the crew, his full lips drawn down at the corners. Behind him, one of the young midshipmen faints. Byam goes to his side. Lai looks sharply at him, and Byam steps back to his place. Later, the men stand gazing soberly at the deck.
Punishment carried out, sir.
Mr. Madison, come aboard. Mr. Fryer, make ready to sail.
Starboard watch secure for sea. Starboard watch shortened in cable.
The men go to their duties. Byam hesitates, gripping one of the thick ropes. Two sailors climb a shroud, rope netting like a ladder up a mast.
In, Captain's gig, Mr. Christian. Open watches, hoist.
Men lift a dinghy from the water with ropes and pulleys.
Winds offshore!
Christian finds Byam.
You'll take the missus, Mr. Byam. What's the matter? Afraid to go along?
Why, it's child's play.
The man they flogged. He's dead.
Get along, ahead. Morrison, stop those men!
Morrison uses his whip on Ellison and his friends as they turn spokes on a large horizontal wheel. Byam climbs to a platform on the mizzenmast.
Child's play.
He trips and almost falls. The men untie the sails. The sailors come down from the mast, sliding along thick ropes. Hayward beats the last sailor with a crop.
Give Hannard!
Hayward!
Christian.
I'll take care of him.
Keep home!
The giant square sails unfurl from the yard beams and fill with wind. A team of sailors wearing flat-brimmed hats and cropped jackets hauls a rope.
Get ready for sea, sir.
Come on, lee helm.
Lee helm, sir.
Ready, sir.
A sailor turns the helm wheel. On shore, the townspeople gather.
Oh, Mary, it's such a little ship.
My Tommy will bring her on.
Sir Joseph gazes soberly at the Bounty. On board, the men raise their hats. Wind fills the massive white sails as the Bounty heads out to sea. At the front of the ship, men slide down from the bowsprit, a beam that juts from the tip of the bow and anchors two triangular jib sails. Later, Christian follows Bligh to his cabin.
Well, we're on the canvas again, Mr. Christian.
Yes, sir.
It's our third voyage together.
Not of my choosing, sir.
So the port admiral told me. Well, you're here. I requested you. I like having a gentleman as my subordinate, being a self-made man.
I admire you for that, sir.
And for very little else.
Sailing orders? Tahiti direct by Cape Horn.
Bligh gazes sidelong at him.
Winds permitting. Of course, if we can't make westing, we shall have to turn round and go back by Africa. In that case, we shall have to put in for supplies at Simon's Bay.
We'll need them. This ship has worse food and less of it than a prison hulk. And that clerk of yours, I'm sorry, but I don't trust him.
Who asked you to meddle with my clerk and his supplies?
You can't get much from a man with a lank belly. I have to work these men we feed, you know.
Men? Rascals and pirates? Did you see them growl at the flogging? I'll teach them what flogging's like.
My advice, sir, if you'll take it, is not to be too harsh with them. We're sailing 10,000 miles, locked up together on this ship for the next 2 years. It's like a powder magazine.
I don't want your advice. I wave my own with seamen. They respect but one law, the law of fear, and it'll be well for my officers to remember that.
Well, I can only tell you what I think. These men may come from jails and taverns, but they're Englishmen, and they'll sail this ship anywhere.
I'm not interested in what you think. I expect you to carry out whatever orders I give, whenever I give them.
I'll carry out your orders, Mr. Bligh.
Then we understand each other.
Perfectly.
He flashes a charming smile.
Any orders for the deck, sir?
No.
At all?
Yes, you may go.
Thank you, sir.
Bligh settles into his desk chair and examines a map. Later, the Bounty cuts through the choppy sea, nearly at full sail. Its three masts are each about 100 feet tall. The fore and mizzen masts bear three sails, and the middle mainmast bears four. As the Bounty pitches gently, two sailors climb the foremast to open a gathered sail. Christian and Captain Bligh stand on deck, gazing up at the rigging. Bligh grins.
She's flying, Mr. Christian. Tahiti direct, sir.
Tahiti direct, Mr. Christian. Pass it on. No change of sail without my orders. Put 2 men at the wheel. We'll carry on or carry on down.
Very good, sir.
Christian finds Fryer.
Southeast by east, sir.
Southeast by east it is, sir.
No change in sails except for captain's order.
Very good, Mr. Christian.
Mr. Byam,
You'll stand by for midshipman school.
Aye, aye, sir.
The mousy cook shuffles across the deck and tosses a pail of slop into the wind.
No, out of there! Never empty your buckets into the wind! Find the wind, you idiot! Find the wind and then choose your ale! Get below!
Copying Bly, the drenched cook holds a wet finger in the air, now in the midshipman's quarters.
We're off around the world, boys. Light hearts and tight britches. Off around the world.
Oh, dry up, you cop.
Byam takes a pocket knife from Stewart's desk and frays a rope on Hayward's hammock.
Is it human? What do you think, Stewart?
I can't stand yowling water, baby.
Byam taps a lantern hanging from the ceiling and sets it swinging.
Rock-a-bye, baby, in the tree.
Blast you, Byam. I told you not to swing that lantern.
You don't mean to say it makes you seasick. An old buccaneer like you? La-dee-da.
I'll knock more tar out of you in a minute, but it'll take a month to mix.
Come on,
Stewart
come
stands
on,
up.
Oh, stow it, will you? I can't make head or tail of this navigation.
Don't worry, Stewart. If you get tangled, I'll jump in and pull you out.
Well, you better not try and fool Mr. Christian.
Mr. Christian holds no terrors for me.
I can wade the seven seas and never wet my shirt. They have whales down there that can sink a ship, but
Christian
I can sink
appears behind him.
Behold the face that launched 1,000 ships.
He sees Christian and stands at attention with the others. Mr. Christian paces in and takes a seat below Hayward's shaving mirror.
Gentlemen, today's navigating problem. Given the altitude of Polaris, could you find your latitude, Mr. Stewart?
To lead up to it, ordinarily the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. But this is not true of navigation. We must consider winds and currents. And...
Yes. Well, suppose you consider the problem.
Yes, sir.
Perhaps Mr. Stewart means that it's like that lantern, sir. We assume it should hang straight down, but because the ship is rolling, it swings to and fro. But
Hayward eyes the swinging lantern.
You disagree with Byam, Mr. Hayward? He knows the lantern makes me seasick. He's doing it to break up the lesson. Stewart doesn't know his problem.
Nevertheless, his original theory interests me.
Please, sir.
Hayward dashes out, covering his mouth.
Proceed, Mr. Byam. You were saying, by watching the lantern closely...
Stewart reels.
It seems to be the trouble, Mr. Stewart.
He pitches forward and runs out.
Watch the wind, Mr. Stewart.
Byam looks away from the lantern.
It's not there. It's there.
Byam's view of the lantern blurs.
Is that the face that launched 1,000 ships?
Byam returns a groggy look and staggers from the room. Christian stands and gets caught in a trance watching the lantern swing, then shakes his head and walks out. On deck, the three young midshipmen lean over the railing. Stewart clutches his stomach.
One navigation problem and three wrecks. Smart as paint you are.
Why, you ungrateful swab. After I've given my all for the honor of the class.
As Byam heads below deck, Hayward boots him in the rear. Hayward glances around cautiously, then strolls away, smiling to himself. Behind him, Byam dashes up the steps and cuffs him. Hayward fights back. Across the deck, Bly spots the young men.
Byam! It wasn't my fault, sir. He came up behind me and struck me.
Is that true, Miss Byam?
I'd rather not say, sir.
Well, your hat's full of hornets, and you want to fight. I'll call you off. Get to the masthead and stay there till I call you down.
All the way, sir?
All the way.
As Byam starts to climb, Hayward stands gaping at him.
Get below or call out!
He scrambles below, passing Mr. Christian, who joins Bly, gazing up at the mast.
Rather heavy weather to send that youngster aloft, isn't it, sir? Mr. Christian, they must land this ship is not a bear garden. If you don't teach him, I will. Look alive, you crawling caterpillar!
Christian scowls at Bly and walks away. Buffeted by the wind, Byam reaches the highest yard beam on the mast and sits. Below deck, Hayward returns to the cabin.
Where's Byam?
I couldn't help it, Stewart. Every time the old man looks at me, I want to jump overboard.
Where's Byam?
The old man sent him aloft.
You let him take the blame, huh?
He slaps Hayward. They struggle.
Here, here. You've started enough trouble already. Time you learned a little discipline. Now get into your hammock before I put you over a gun.
Yes.
Hayward climbs into his hammock, and the rope breaks. Stewart suppresses a laugh.
Get up! You see, sir, it isn't my fault. They're only jealous because I've been at sea before.
Who did that?
I did, sir.
Come here.
Christian takes Stewart out of the cabin, glances around, then slaps him on the shoulder.
Good.
As he walks away, Stewart smiles. Up at the masthead, Byam wears a rope around his waist, securing him to the mast as the ship bucks and rolls. Later, at night, lanterns glow at the stern of the Bounty as it lists severely to the side, with the masts tilting 20 degrees. A sailor stumbles across the deck to a brass bell. Aloft, Byam hangs limp over the yard beam. Below deck, Christian sits in the officer's cabin.
How she creeps. Winds again. I'm too old to envy young Byam aloft.
Splice the main brace, Mr. Morgan.
I'll take it to kill germs with.
What? Waste my brandy? Here, you use the ship's drinking water. It would shrivel me wooden leg.
The surgeon wobbles to his feet.
Did you ever hear how I lost my leg?
No, but we will. Well, I'm worried about Byam.
Oh, he'll weather it all right. Well, I left my leg with John Paul Jones back in 78. We came astern the Yankee. Up went our colors and our captain hails. What ship is that? American ship Ranger, roars Jones, and up go his colors. Louder, you Yankee pipsqueak, our captain yells. I can't hear you. Can you hear this, says Jones? And he lets go a broadside.
The ship tilts, sending him across the cabin. Christian rushes over.
You all right?
Nothing lost, Mr. Christian.
Look after him, Mr. Morgan.
Climbing over the surgeon's wooden leg, Christian goes on deck. At the helm, Captain Bly stands alongside a sailor, gripping the wheel with him. Water blows across the deck as the ship tosses on the waves. In the gale wind, sailors venture up the masts. Standing on a rope below a yard beam, other men tie up a sail. On deck, Christian looks up the main mast and sees Byam slumped over the yard, his arms and legs dangling. Christian glances around, then starts up a rope shroud. Soaked through, Bly holds fast to the wheel. Above, sailors cling to the yardarm. Up on the main mast, Christian reaches the platform below Byam, then climbs a last set of ropes to the yard. He sits on the yard, straddling it, with a mast between him and Byam. Later, Christian comes back down to the deck and takes hold of Byam as he's lowered on a rope tied under his arms. At the helm, Bly looks up from the wheel and spots them. Sailors hold Byam as Christian cuts the rope.
Down below to the surgeon!
Holding onto ropes, Bly steps away from the wheel.
Mr. Christian!
Christian leans into the wind and staggers over.
Who brought that man down? Hide us! But I sent him alone! He's gone under the top no place! I know his place! Daniel knew yours! In game discipline, not break it! Send him aloft! Mr. Bly's had enough! Send him aloft again!
Below, Morgan gives Byam a brandy.
That's right, lad. Drink another. You'll be as bright as a trivet. If you'd lost a leg now... I lost mine in action against the French off Jamaica. A French surgeon did the trick for me. He apologized in French and I cursed him in English.
Byam sits up as Christian enters.
How is he?
Huh?
All right, sir.
He'll go anywhere.
Get to the masthead again, Byam.
I've taken my punishment, sir.
Get to the masthead.
I've had a bellyful of that masthead from Captain Bly. You can't make me go back up there again.
I am. Mr. Christian brought you down, lad.
Thank you, sir. I didn't understand. Captain's orders.
You mind?
No, let him out.
Here, you'll need this.
Here's something else you need. And you're a plucky youngster. If necessary, I'd be happy to cut off your leg any time.
Thanks.
Byam shares a smile with Christian, then heads out the door carrying a cloak and the bottle of brandy.
Anything happens to that lad, Byam will... Christian, careful!
He storms out. The surgeon and Mr. Morgan gape. On the deck, Christian gazes up at the network of ropes where Byam climbs toward the masthead. Bly watches, frowning. The corners of his lips draw down around his jutting chin. In the driving rain, Byam continues to climb. Below the first platform, his feet slip, and he dangles from the ropes by his hands. He gains his footing again and hoists himself level with the platform. In one hand, he still clutches the bottle of brandy. Christian watches as he nears the highest yard beam where a sail is tightly wrapped. With the tails of his coat flapping, he pulls himself level with the beam and takes his position again. Below, Christian smiles and gives him a hearty wave. Byam grins and waves back. Toward the helm, Bly glances up at the masthead with his face drawn in the same dour expression. Now on a world map, a line shows the Bounty's route from Portsmouth toward the northwest coast of Africa. Daytime, the ship glides across calm seas at full sail. On deck, the sailors stand in rows wearing their cropped uniform jackets.
O eternal God, who alone spreadest out the heavens and rulest the raging of the sea, who hast compassed the waters with bounds until night and day come to an end, be pleased to receive into thy almighty and most gracious protection the persons of us, thy servants, and the fleet in which we serve. Preserve us from the dangers of the sea, that we may be a safeguard unto our most gracious Lord King George and his kingdoms.
Bly holds a book, but recites from memory.
Their lawful occasions, and that we may return in safety to enjoy the blessings of the land with the fruits of our labors, and with a thankful remembrance of thy mercies to praise and glorify thy holy name through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
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 Ship's coming, eh?
On hats.
The sailors and officers put on their hats.
The ship's company will bear in mind we are at sea under the Articles of War. Or perhaps you are unaware that the Articles of War invest in me the authority to order punishment. During the recent heavy weather, I've had the opportunity to watch all of you at work, on deck and aloft. You don't know wood from canvas, and it seems that you don't want to learn. Well, I'll have to give you a lesson. You, step forward.
Ellison and his friends.
You three are a disgrace to salt water. 10 days and half rations. What's your name?
Thomas Burkett, sir.
A thief.
Convicted. Offered a choice, Dartmoor Prison or the King's Navy.
Have you been to Dartmoor Prison, Burkett?
Yes, sir.
It seems that you now prefer the Navy. You may regret that choice, Burkett, before this voyage is over. Your name?
Thomas Ellison, sir. Pressed into service. I've got a wife. A baby.
I asked your name, not the history of your misfortunes. Your name?
The mousy cook salutes.
Smith, not you, you idiot, Hugh.
William Muspratt, sir.
Have you got a wife, Muspratt? Have you got a wife?
Two, sir.
The ship's company will remember that I am your captain, your judge, and your jury. You do your duty and we may get along. But whatever happens, you'll do your duty. Go for it.
Aye there, lad.
As the men disperse, Burkett turns to his friends.
Thief. Nobody calls me a thief but the men I steals from.
Half ration.
Muspratt slams down a wooden peg, catching Bly's attention.
You there! Who did that?
He goes to Ellison.
I can't tell you, sir.
Mr. Morrison?
Aye, sir.
Fought that man for 24 lashes?
Muspratt steps up.
I done it, sir.
Pick it up. Put it back. Mr. Morrison, lay on with a will.
Aye, aye, sir.
Muspratt shields himself as Morrison flogs him. Christian stands with Bly.
Mr. Bly, these men aren't king and country volunteers, you know. They've been brought aboard by press gangs and from jails. Give me a week or two and I'll get some spirit into them without flogging.
What? Teach them now who's master. Never let them forget it. Mr. Morrison!
Aye, sir.
Before we see Portsmouth again, I'll make them jump in a midshipman's jacket. Either of it's hung in a broomstick to dry. Give this man his 24. When I ask for information, I expect to get it.
Morrison turns on Ellison. Now on a map, a line charts the Bounty's course through the South Atlantic. On board, a slight man climbs up from below deck.
I didn't hear the watch call, sir.
Why not?
So
sorry, sir. I was cleaning brass for Mr. Byam.
That's true, sir. Mr. Morrison, search this man over a gun and give him 24 lashes.
But I was responsible, sir.
Mr. Byam will be in charge of the punishment.
Later, Byam watches.
24, that's enough, Mr. Morrison.
On the map, the bounty cuts southward toward Cape Horn. On board, a sailor falls from a high yard beam and drops into the water.
Hey, look,
boy! You're alive! I'm the idiot. I have to teach my top men not to fall off the ship, Mr. Morrison! Will you get him aboard? Stretch him with a rail to dry him off.
Later, the sailor hangs by his wrists with a weight around his neck. On the map, the bounty heads east across the South Atlantic.
I can't stand it. I'm gonna get water.
Men scrub the deck.
Get back to your work!
I wanted water for my niece, sir. I can't stand it. Please, sir.
What is it?
This man left his work, sir. Wants water.
Look, sir.
His knees
it's
are raw.
It's worked in cruel. I wanted water to wash it.
I'll give you water.
Mr. Morrison, keel haul, this man.
Later, they throw the young man off the bow with a rope tied under his arms.
All the way!
Under the ship, the rope drags the man along the keel. A sailor hauls the rope in at the stern, hoisting the man from the water. His head hangs limp as they pull him aboard and lay him on his back. With Bly looking on, the surgeon opens one of the man's eyes.
Well?
The man is dead, Mr. Bly.
Bly paces away. Now the map line touches the Cape of Good Hope at the southern tip of Africa, then moves onward into the Indian Ocean. On placid seas, the bounty drifts along, its sails hanging slack, as sailors rowing a dinghy tow the ship. On deck, Bly wears the ruffled collar of his shirt open. He joins a white-haired officer at the bow.
Mr. Bly, I've seen calms and doldrums, but not one like this in 40 years. The men in the boats are worn out, trying to pull us into a wind.
Not the way they're pulling. Call them in and put new men into the boats.
Very good, sir. Mr. Morrison, pipe them in. Change the boat crews.
Byam goes to the mess.
Dive in with your mess, lads. The boats are alongside.
Come on, my lads. Dive
in there. Mr. Byam, look at this bit of meat, sir. It's alive.
I'm sorry, lad. There's nothing I can do about it.
Burkett saws his meat.
This bit of meat was mined in a rock quarry.
He eyes the other man's plate.
Here, I'll change with you, lad.
Thanks.
It's alive, all right. But they're fresh meat anyway.
Mr. Byam, I'm reporting these two men unfit for duty.
Very good, sir. You men are relieved.
Mr. Byam, what's the delay here? Don't you realize we're in the doldrums and we're waiting for these men to pull us into a wind?
Well, I'm sorry, sir. The men haven't finished mess. And these two are unfit for duty.
Unfit?
My orders, sir.
I give the orders here. If they can walk, they can work. Put them in the boats and get these other men out immediately.
Byam stares after Bly as he storms out. Later, crews row two dinghies in front of the ship. In one of the boats, Byam sits at the rudder in full uniform as the bare-chested sailors row.
Any sign of a breeze, sir? I'm about at the end of my rope.
Keep up your stroke, man. I'll whistle a wind up for you.
The men pull hard on the long oars. Some wear their black uniform hats. In the other boat, Stewart sits at the rudder.
Can't we rest a spell, sir?
No. Keep your hats closed.
On board, the cook climbs above deck carrying a full bucket. He glances around, looking up at the flat sails, then licks his finger and raises it in the air. Fidgeting nervously, he heads below again with the bucket and sets it beside 10 others, all filled with slop. On deck, a sailor opens a barrel for Mags, who stands by with an accounting book.
This is the cask with only one cheese in, sir.
Uh-huh.
What's this?
Two cheeses are gone.
What?
Two 50-pound cheeses missing. Stolen, of course, sir.
Thieves and jailbirds!
What's that, sir?
100 pounds of cheese gone. They'd steal the canvas of a corpse.
That's strange. I remember I checked the stores myself.
Cheeses can't fly, you fool. They've been stolen, of course. Stop the ship's company's allowance of cheese until the theft's made up.
Yes.
But begging your pardon, sir, back in Portsmouth, that cask was opened by your orders, and Mr. Meggs had them cheeses carried ashore.
Silence!
Perhaps you'll recollect, sir, Mr. Meggs had me take them to your house.
You insolent scoundrel!
But I remember very well, sir, because I didn't get to see my wife that day.
Bosun, spread eagle, that liar to the rigging till sundown.
Aye, aye, sir.
Wind off the starboard bow, sir!
And the larboard braces!
Aye, aye, sir.
Here, get that.
The men go to their posts, and Bly strides to the bow, followed by Christian.
Well, Mr. Christian, if your rascals are any good, bring us into the wind. Let's not lose this one.
Hold! Hold that!
Stewart whips his crew.
Send her up, Brecker.
Hold!
On Byam's boat, the men wince as they row. Byam snaps his whip over their heads.
Come on, Mouse, get it! Put your weight in it!
Good lad, must play. Pull, lad!
Sweat covers their bare chests. On board, Christian glances up at the sails. They start to billow out. Byam grins.
We're in! We're in! Well done there!
Bly's lips curl in a slight smile. Christian beams.
Well, shall I call the boats in, sir?
They've done their job.
What do they have? What do you expect me to do? Knight them?
Hoist the boats.
Aye, sir.
Good night! Good night!
Well, we're out of the doldrums at last, sir.
Mm-hmm. Bosun, I told you to spread eagle at lie. Why hasn't it been done?
Very good.
Morrison salutes.
Come along, my boy.
Now the cook shuffles across the deck with another bucket. Raising his finger, he then tosses the whole bucket overboard. Suddenly, he gapes at his empty hands and looks over the railing. At sunset, the sailor accused of lying hangs with his limbs bound to a rope shroud. Below, the officers and Byam dine with Bly.
There's nothing more powerful than brandy. I threw a brandy bottle overboard once, an empty one, off the coast of Madagascar. 3 years later, I picked it up in a river in Portugal. It had gone back to its home vineyard for more.
Mr. Sergeant, you would have made an excellent historian. You have a profound contempt for facts.
I don't despise facts, sir. I'm indifferent to them.
On deck, the sun glares down on the spread-eagled sailor.
What a...
Meanwhile, at Bly's table.
Cheese, Mr. Christian.
No, thank you, sir.
Mr. Byam?
No, thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Perhaps the surgeon would like some cheese.
No, thank you, sir. Bad for my innards.
To the best of my recollection, Mr. Christian, you're usually partial to cheese.
Not tonight, sir.
Bly throws down his morsel.
Burn me, I believe you, with a man.
If you'll allow me, sir, I think you've been unjust.
Unjust?
After all, gentlemen, a bit of cheese, more or less.
Unjust, sir. In other words, you say I'm the man who lied?
I didn't say that, sir.
You implied it?
Mr. Bly, I have no doubt that Maggs disposed of the cheeses at Portsmouth without your knowledge. I can't understand your treatment of the men who simply obeyed his orders.
Mr. Maggs is my clerk. It is not for my men to question his orders.
Nor for you to question mine. I want your apology.
I have nothing more to say, sir.
Very well, then you can dine elsewhere on what you can get.
Mr. Bly.
Byam.
Christian gets up and nods politely to the others.
Gentlemen.
Bly glares hotly at him as he leaves. The others stare at their plates.
Come here, implied it, didn't I, Mr. Byam? Then I can also dispense with your company.
Thank you, sir.
He walks out, leaving the surgeon and Mr. Fryer. Bly turns on them.
So you're all against me, officers and men. Won't eat cheese, eh? Before I've done with you, I'll make you eat grass.
Daytime. Muspratt watches Burkitt fish with a line.
I'm so hungry, if my own mother would reach out to pet me, I'd have a bit of her hand.
As Burkitt turns away, Muspratt eats the bait from
there,
the hook.
All right. But they're making jokes about the bait.
You see...
He stares at the bare 3-inch hook, then turns to Muspratt.
If I could prove what I suspect...
No, I wouldn't. I'm so weak, I'm peaceful.
How's Brad? Burkitt.
Huh?
Look here, supper.
What?
Burkitt takes a small chunk of meat from Ellison.
Hi, Mr. Christian, sir. Take a look at this, sir. Supper for 6 men. 4 pounds, they calls it. If that bit of pig weighs more than 2, I'll eat the cat and 9 tails.
It ain't even pig, sir. It's horse meat.
We pulled our hearts out for this, Breeser. And what do we get? We starve for it.
Well, Burkitt, little meat, no distemper.
Keep the wind in the sails and out of your stomach. But if it's any comfort to you, the officers are in the same boat as the men.
Not Captain Bligh, sir. He's getting fat. The dirty thieving...
Hang it! Any more of that and I'll clap you in irons.
Yes, sir.
Burkett wanders away. The others stand around Christian, gazing at him. And he leaves. Leaning against the railing, Burkett looks down at the water and spots a large fish swimming alongside the ship.
Buckos! Buckos! Here's your supper.
Thompson, get your hook and line.
See him? He's a big one, eh?
Hang on, Burkett.
Well, we've got to have bait. Sharks ain't seamen, they expect to eat. We've got to have bait.
Nearby, the cook ducks away nervously.
You want to risk this for a meal?
Huh? I'm willing.
Yeah.
If the hook don't kill him, that pork will.
Burkett jabs the hook through the chunk of meat, then swings it over the side and feeds out line. The men watch the small shark intently.
Here it goes. Here it goes.
Its fin cuts through the water, then goes under.
Got it!
Come back with him!
All in her. Easy now.
Later, the men cut the shark's meat.
You first, Burkett. Choose for your mess.
Thanks, mates.
Mags appears.
Yeah, fine catch you've got. I must have a slice, eh?
Shark eat shark?
You forget yourself, Burkett. You give me a slice, a nice large one, and I'll say nothing.
Tell him, you slimy quill pusher. Take that slice.
He knocks Mags over, then turns and sees Bly scowling at him. Later, Burkett stands with his wrists bound over his head as Morrison flogs him. That night, below deck, Burkett lies on the floor, surrounded by his friends. They rise as the surgeon hobbles in.
At ease, lads. At ease.
What? How's our shark killer, huh?
He's cut to bits, sir.
He'll be all right. What's the flogging? A few blows and a few O's, and then you put on your shirt.
He hands Burkett a bottle.
Thank you, sir.
If you'd lost a leg, my lad. I left mine with a Spanish pirate off the coast of Trinidad. A bullfighter did the trick for me. He was so drunk, he nearly cut off the wrong leg. Hey!
He snatches the bottle back. The men chuckle.
You'll be all right. A bit tattooed on the back, perhaps, but... just the right style for Tahiti, eh? Hey, fiddler, give him a tune.
Hey, sir.
Good night, lads.
Good night, sir. Good night, sir.
Outside, moonlight glimmers across the open sea as the HMS Bounty bobs gently in the waves. On deck, Byam and Christian lean against the railing.
Listen, Byam. You can flog those fellows, starve them. They'll bob up again with a glass or a fiddle.
Music at sea. I never imagined how beautiful it was.
Astrid, arms! Stop that infernal jamboree! It's worse than two cats on a fence!
The old death's head. I've never known a better seaman, but as a man, he's a snake. He doesn't punish for discipline. He likes to see men crawl. Sometimes I'd like to push his poison down his own throat.
You both have one thing in common. The devil's own temper.
He can let his go. But whether I can keep mine bottled up on this half a warren for the next 2 years is a question.
I believe you will. Whatever happens, I'll always be glad I've known you.
I'll remember that when you're an admiral. Good night, officer.
Good night.
Byam grins as his friend walks away. Now on the map, the line charts the Bounty's course across the southern part of the Indian Ocean to Tasmania. The Bounty then sails below New Zealand into the South Pacific and reaches a cluster of small islands, Tahiti. In Bly's cabin, the weak-chinned cook hovers nearby as Bly eats his soup.
More tea, sir?
No, you get out.
Yes.
As the cook opens the door to leave, Christian steps in.
You sent for me, sir?
Oh, yes, I got a job for you this morning. Sit down. Had your breakfast?
Yes, thank you, sir.
I want you to sign the ship's daybook, list of all supplies issued on the outward voyage. Certify and sign. We should raise the islands any time now. Not a bad voyage so far. All hands accounted for. Only six down with scurvy.
Five with scurvy, one with flogging.
Correct, Mr. Christian. There's your credit. Five with scurvy, one with flogging. We're still under canvas.
Mr. Bligh, Icon signed his book. No such amounts have been issued to the men.
Now, look here. You've signed daybooks before with a few extra kegs in the ship never carried.
I have, sir.
And why not? We all do it. We'd be fools if we didn't on a lieutenant's pay, and I want a stowaway enough to keep me out of the gutter when I'm too old for service.
I understand. The captain's prerogative. Ordinarily, I wouldn't mind.
Why is this case different?
Because the captains I've served with before didn't starve their men. They didn't save money by buying up the stinking meat that you put aboard at Tenerife. They didn't buy yams that would sicken a pig and force them on their crew.
Silence!
They didn't call their men thieves and flog them to the bone because they complained about it.
You impudent scoundrel, send that book!
I refuse. And you have no authority that can make me.
I haven't. I'll show you authority. Lay all hands aft. All hands aft.
Very good, sir.
Later, the sailors gather on deck, many of them bare-chested.
Company, sir!
Bly strides out, holding a book.
Mr. Christian, step forward.
Christian does.
If any officer, mariner, or soldier, or other person in the fleet shall disobey any lawful command of any of his superior officers, every such person being convicted of any such offense shall suffer death, or such other punishment as shall be inflicted on him by the sentence of a court-martial.
Bly gazes keenly at him, then dons his broad naval officer's hat.
Mr. Christian, you will sign this book.
Mr. Bly, ship's company will bear witness that I sign in obedience to your orders.
He signs with a quill pen.
And remember, sir, I shall demand a court of inquiry in England.
You mutinous dog.
Retract that, sir.
I will repeat it. You're a mutinous dog.
Mr. Chris.
Land ho, sir!
Right away!
Byam grins excitedly. Gaping, Ellison and his friends look out across the water at a strip of land barely visible through a haze. Toward the bow, the cook stands beside the white-haired Mr. Fryer.
What is it, Mr. Fryer?
Tahiti, you fool!
Oh.
In full uniform, Bly stands at the railing, smiling. He goes to Christian.
So you'll face me with a court of inquiry, eh, in England? Well, Mr. Christian, we're a long way from England, and what can happen on this ship before we get there may surprise even you.
Christian gazes at him with narrowed eyes as Bly walks away. Now on the island, dozens of Tahitian men and women run out of a glade of palm trees onto a beach. Some shove off in long outrigger canoes. Others dive into the water and start to swim out to sea. The men wear cloths wrapped around their waists, and the women wear bandeau-style tops and long sarong skirts. Some women wear crowns of palm fronds. The outrigger canoes make their way toward the Bounty, and the Tahitians climb aboard with friendly smiles. Two midshipmen grin at a beautiful woman with long dark hair as she hops down from the railing. Tahitian men bring aboard giant stalks of bananas. On the deck, more bananas and coconuts lie in a pile. Muspratt reaches for a coconut, but a woman distracts him. As she passes by, he stares at her with a silly grin. Another islander cuts open a coconut and hands it to him. The man signals for Muspratt to drink, so he takes a sip.
Milk! It's milk! Compton! They got cows here that lays eggs! What a fly!
A Tahitian man joins sailors on the shrouds. On deck, the scrawny man who was punished sits propped against a dinghy.
Would you help me up, sir, please? I'd like to see the island.
What for? All islands are alike.
That's a singularly stupid observation, sir.
Morgan and the surgeon help the man to his feet.
Science is one thing and experience is another. Yeah. You see one island, you've seen them all.
Fiddlesticks.
The land will be first ashore, Fletcher. Captain's orders to begin my dictionary. I'll get my trade goods. Perhaps we can go ashore together.
All right.
Christian nods and Byam dashes off. On the water, a craft with two carved pontoons glides toward the Bounty, paddled by Tahitian men. Guards surround a man with palm branches on a platform raised between the pontoons. On the Bounty, sailors watch the craft approach. A gray-haired man stands and raises a staff to Bly.
I know that man.
Who is he, sir?
He was a friend of Captain Cook's when I was sailing master.
Hiddy Hiddy, chief of the island, priest of the great temple. Bosun, pipe him aboard.
Aye, aye, sir.
Fire, dress ship.
Very good, sir. Dress ship!
The craft pulls alongside the Bounty, and Chief Hiddy Hiddy climbs aboard. He wears a printed knee-length cloth around his waist and a headband of shark's teeth. On deck, he greets the sailors with a smile.
Fly!
The captain steps out to meet him.
Fly!
Your Honor Tawa.
Oh, yes, Your Honor Tawa, yes.
Fly, you got fat.
It is 10 years since we sailed together with Captain Cook.
It is any Captain Cook.
I beg your pardon?
Where Captain Cook?
Captain Cook is dead.
Morty?
Yes, Morty.
He was a good man.
Oh, yes.
King George.
King George?
Ibaoi. Captain Cook say, King George, come on next English ship.
Bly glances away, rubbing his nose.
His Majesty is extremely sorry he couldn't come. I beg your pardon?
My hat. Captain Cook say, if King George don't come, he send hat.
Oh, yes, of course, the hat. Mr. Maggs, will you go to my cabin and bring me the hat?
The
cocked hat, you fool!
Yes, sir.
The hat will be here in one moment.
Nearby, a small crowd of island children and adults surrounds Byam and a box of trinkets. Meanwhile, with Bly and Hiti-Hiti.
So we shall require 1,000 breadfruit plants.
Breadfruit. Uru.
Correct, Uru.
All we have for you.
Thank you. We shall probably have to stay here for several months. We shall have provision and...
Yoma! Oyo te namu te ya.
Hiti-Hiti points to Byam.
Yoma! Why poro mai te ya to papa? How to poro?
Oh, but they're welcome to anything. Don't be a fool, Byam. You'll need those gifts to make friends ashore.
Him no need gift by friend. Me Hiti-Hiti. You my Tayo.
Tayo? Chief makes you his friend.
In my tongue. Close friend. You leave home, my home.
Tayo, friend. The finest word in any language. It shall be the first in my dictionary, sir.
The hat, sir.
Ah, yes, thank you. For the compliments of His Majesty, King George III of Great Britain.
Maruru.
Maruru.
Hiti-Hiti dons the fancy naval officer's hat.
Byam, you come ashore with me.
Sir?
Permission granted, mind you report on board ship every night.
Very good, sir.
Byam, we leave with my family.
Impossible. I can have no favorites aboard my ship.
Bly, you are chief on this ship. But I am chief on that island. Byam will come with me. Yes?
Perhaps that is best. Permission granted. By the way, Mr. Morrison, pipe the ship's company aft.
Aye, aye, sir. All hands off.
The Tahitians stay aboard and watch as the Bounty sailors gather before Bly and his officers.
Well, we're here. Tahiti at last. England to Cape Horn, Africa, New Zealand, Van Diemen's Land, and the Great South Seas. I've sailed the Bounty over 27,000 miles. And you think you've come to an island paradise. A tropical grog shop of feast and song and sleep. Well, you're wrong. You're here to labor. You'll fill this ship with breadfruit trees. You'll recondition her for sea. Shore leave permitted if and when I can spare you. If you abuse it, you'll answer to me. And remember, your work is finished when we drop anchor in Portsmouth Harbor. Mr. Fryer will have charge of work ashore.
Very good, sir.
Mr. Christian, you will remain on board in charge of reconditioning the ship. Unfortunately, that means you will have no shore leave while we're here at Tahiti. That's all.
Later, islanders drape long garlands of flowers along the Bounty's prow and around her figurehead. On land, a man grips the trunk of a palm tree with his bare hands and feet and climbs quickly to the top with a hopping motion. Men perched at the tops of other palms hack down branches and coconuts with their machetes. Later, men and women grate the insides of coconuts and pour the white shavings into a trough. Nearby, women make flower garlands. They each wear a crown of the white flowers in their flowing dark hair. At the water, men grab fish with their bare hands from a pool formed by a dam. They scoop up the fish and toss them onto the shore. On top of the pile, a 2-foot-long shark lies wriggling its sleek tail. Inland, men remove broad leaves covering a pit. A dead pig lies underneath. Now, on the Bounty, children jump from the decorated bow into the water. Later, a Tahitian man helps Morgan, the elderly officer, plant a breadfruit sapling in a bucket. The sailors carry the buckets of saplings on their shoulders past a group of women preparing food. Muspratt stops and stares, licking his lips. Two young women with flowers tucked behind their ears smile up at him.
What a place.
Hey, when's dinner?
The women giggle. Muspratt bashfully turns away. Fryer appears, scowling. Muspratt's smile fades, and he quickly returns to work. Later, the sailors row a dinghy filled with saplings out to the ship. On the island, a shapely woman leads the smiling cook to her thatched hut. A troop of children runs past them into the hut, and the woman turns to him. He points to the children, and she nods. The cook dashes off into the forest, with the woman chasing after him. Outside a hut, Hiti Hiti wears his hat, while Bayam works inside, writing with a quill pen. Taking off the big hat, Hiti Hiti goes inside, where Bayam sits at a desk, shirtless.
Your language is most un-English, Hiti Hiti. It means exactly what it says. Here are 3 pages on your words meaning look.
Can't they kind of look?
That's the trouble. There's one for the downcast eyes, one for the sidelong glance, one that invites, one that consents. A whole language of looks.
Bayam, you think too much. One day, you had go crack.
Bayam chuckles. Now, a woman with dark, sparkling eyes dashes in with a crown of flowers.
Hey, Ona.
She sets it on Bayam's head.
No, Tahani. I've told you before, I like my flowers in a bowl. Now, scat, I'm busy.
She puts them on his head again and runs off. Bayam tosses them away. Looking over her shoulder, Tahani pouts coyly.
What do you call that look, Bayam?
The look of a charming girl who'll still be happy when we English invaders go home. By the way, Hiti Hiti, what's your word for money?
Money? What is money?
All right, I'll explain. Now, which would you choose, the shilling or the nail? Oh, no, Hiti Hiti. With one of these, you can buy 20 of these.
Where?
Well, in England. You see, in England, you must have money to live with, to buy food.
In Ireland of England, no fruit on tree, no fish in the sea?
Oh, yes, plenty.
No money, no food?
That's right.
I stay here.
He bites into a banana.
Sounds like Christian. But it can't be.
Maybe so.
Hiti, you got him, leave!
Bayam dashes out and runs to meet Fletcher Christian, who wears his full naval uniform.
Ahoy, Robinson Crusoe!
Fletcher, I'd given up all thought of seeing you ashore, and Hiti never even winked.
When he came aboard wearing that hat, even the Articles of War failed, Mr. Bly.
The chief approaches them.
Lieutenant. I want to thank you, sir, for speaking to the captain.
The sea is good, but the earth is good also. Be at home.
Oh, it's good to be ashore again. I've been as restless as a...
In the hut, Tahani goes to Bayam's desk, grinning devilishly. Taking his quill, she dips it in ink and scribbles on a page of his notebook as Bayam leads Christian inside.
Why, you little powder monkey! If you ever come across my hawse again, I'll spank your little starboard, you understand?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I didn't know you speak English.
Yes.
Well, you must think me a perfect fool.
Yes.
Well, does she or doesn't she?
Yes. She speaks English, one word, yes.
At the door, another young woman looks in at them.
Mr. Byron, you're a Tahitian dictionary.
Christian notices the woman, who smiles, showing her perfect white teeth.
I might eat.
She walks in, going straight to Christian.
This is Hiti Hiti's granddaughter. Christian, Lieutenant T, my mighty.
Yari oi, eto oi, ayo.
What did she say?
She says you must be a king in your own country.
What? If His Majesty could see her, as I see her now, he'd forgive the error.
Shall I tell her that?
No. I'll just say thank you.
Na ora ona, Maru.
Mayam, your friend is wise. He looks, he understands. You make word, you understand nothing. No work today. Go swim, all.
Come along, Fletcher. I'll show you an island you'll never forget.
Tehani, Harry Mai.
You can't imagine what it's... They'd like to come swimming with us, if you don't object.
Object?
I thought not. Watiaroa. The lieutenant may aoa oa nana. Haere mei.
Mamaiti me are.
As they leave, Hiti Hiti smiles and watches them through a window. Later at the beach, Bayam, Christian, Tahani, and Mamaiti rest below towering palms. Wearing only a skirt and necklaces made of flowers, Mamaiti combs her long hair. They glance over at the men, grinning. Christian and Bayam lounge on the sand, gazing back.
Christian?
Mamaiti makes eyes at her.
Aren't they amazing, Fletcher? I never knew there were such people in the world. They're simple and kind, and yet somehow they're royal.
Hmm? What'd you say?
Nothing.
I'm sorry. I was just thinking. What a contrast to the ship.
Across the cove, a man blows a conch shell. The women rise.
Hey, te here at the name our cove.
Where am I?
Bayam, ehi ona ovairate, taimata uomai.
Tahani wants to race me, come on.
They run after the women into the clear, shallow water and start across the cove. On the other shore, three men and a woman wait for them as they wade out of the water. Bayam catches Tahani's leg, playfully tripping her up. As she dashes out of the water, her wet skirt clings to her curvy hips. Then she and Mamaiti cover themselves with batik wraps. The women exchange an alarmed glance and go to Bayam.
Ten all my name, your papa, your Christian.
Oh, what's wrong? He comes from the ship. Captain Bly's orders.
Bly?
You're to report on board immediately.
Oh, I am. Bayam, I know his game. He gives me shore leave, then recalls it, trying to devil me into insubordination. Well, I'll oblige him. I'll have one day off that coffin ship if I swing for it. Tell him I refuse.
Why is he at you? It's not your item, Christian.
Well, yeah. What did she say?
The man will tell Captain Bly you can't be found.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry I lost my temper.
It's at you. For him, Maua, Mate.
Oh, she says you were magnificent, like a storm at sea.
Christian's cheeks dimple as he gazes at Mamaiti. Later, dressed in his uniform again, Christian returns with Mamaiti to the chief's hut. He shakes Hiti Hiti's hand.
Thank you, sir, for your kindness.
You will come ashore again?
Let rest with you and the captain.
You will come ashore again.
Thank you, sir. Bayam, it's been a day. Goodbye, Mamaiti.
Your honor.
Goodbye, all.
Bye, Fletcher.
Bayam waves as Christian strides away, hat in hand. Mamaiti gazes after him, sadly, then grins to herself. Later, Christian stops near the shore and looks out at a dinghy. Sailors sit idle at the oars, and a midshipman paces the sand, scanning the beach. Christian turns and sees the large clearing filled with dozens of dancers. The men and women move in unison, swiveling their hips to the drums. The men hold out one arm, clutching it with their opposite hand at a right angle. Christian smiles, then drops his gaze and turns to go. Suddenly he sees a figure walking toward him through the trees. It's Mamaiti. She stops a few yards away. White flowers crown her dark, wavy hair. Christian's eyes gleam as he gazes at her soft, beautiful face and delicately arching brows. Mamaiti looks away shyly as Christian comes to her, drawing her close. Their eyes lock, and they kiss. An image of a rising wave swells behind them. Mamaiti wraps her bare arm around Christian's neck and looks into his eyes. Smiling, Christian kisses her again. A rush of wind blows through tall palm trees. At the celebration, the islanders gather in a large circle. The women sit cross-legged in the front, and the men stand behind them. They rock their shoulders to the song. Later, Mamaiti leads Christian to a clearing overlooking the bay. They stand together, silhouetted against the evening light. Mamaiti sits on the ground and lies back on a bed of ferns. Lying down beside her, Christian gazes into her eyes, then kisses her supple lips. Later, at the celebration, a giant bonfire sends up a column of smoke. Holding small torches, the dancers face one direction, then turn in unison. In the forest, Mamaiti lounges on the bed of ferns, her smooth face glowing. She turns to Christian, who lies on his back, gazing into the sky. He smiles, and Mamaiti caresses the side of his handsome face. At dawn, streaks of sunlight glow through the clouds over a glassy sea. Out in the bay, the HMS Bounty floats at anchor. On the beach, Mamaiti and Christian share a smile. Christian kisses both of her hands, then draws her into a strong embrace and kisses her lips. Wearing only his rolled-up pants, he heads into the water with his other clothes tied in a bundle at the top of his shoulders. Mamaiti looks down sadly as he goes, then smiles to herself. Later, Christian swims to the Bounty and holds onto the bottom rung of the ladder to the deck. Mamaiti surfaces beside him. Christian puts a finger to his lips, then gives her a kiss. Her fingers spread over his bare chest. They smile, then Christian playfully waves her away. As she swims off, Christian climbs the ladder, then waves from the deck. Midshipman Stewart appears behind him.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stewart.
Mr. Bligh wishes you to report to him as soon as you come aboard, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart.
Bligh emerges from below deck.
Reporting on board, sir.
You relieve my anxiety, Mr. Christian. I was about to send a shore party to look for you, an armed shore party.
I had your permission to go ashore, sir.
What a fine figure of a king's officer. If I could prove that native runner the liar that he was, I'd have you under arrest. I'll make you regret this. Before this voyage is over, you'll know who's master of the ship.
Mr. Bligh, I have in mind the dead seaman you had flogged in Portsmouth. He struck his captain. You'd like me to strike you. Well, I won't do it.
Very clever, Mr. Christian.
Later, below deck, Bligh steps into a hold full of breadfruit saplings. The wiry old Mr. Morgan joins him.
A thousand plants at the beck of the island.
Mr. Morgan, I shall commend your industry to Sir Joseph. Thanks.
Thank you. There's one difficulty, sir. A very grave one. These growing plants require more water than we can store aboard. Can't let them die, sir.
We won't. Mr. Morgan, I shall take these trees to the West Indies. Every tree in prime condition. I shall cut the water allowance for the entire ship's company.
Morgan stares at him, then at the plants. On deck, Muspratt returns with a bunch of bananas.
Goodbye, old Tayo. I'll drink your health in Portsmouth.
Put your stuff there.
Oh, it's mine, sir. It's a gift.
Captain's orders. Put it down and go forward.
Shore leave in heaven, duty in hell again.
Ellison holds a sack.
What have you got there?
Monday wash, sir. It's a pet, sir. That's the name, Monday wash.
Mr. Maggs, take that laundry for the captain's table.
But, sir...
Cable lashes his face.
Now get forward.
With his cheek bleeding, Ellison hurries away.
Come along there. Hurry.
Did he hurt you, lad? No, but one day I'll take that cane away.
Bligh appears nearby, watching them. Under his gaze, they disperse. Bligh looks out at the bay, where dozens of canoes ferry sailors back to the Bounty. On the island, at Hiti Hiti's hut, Bayam stands before Tahani with an open music box.
Now it's the ear, Tahani.
She takes it, her eyes downcast. Bayam lifts her chin.
Bayam, I tell you.
Yes?
She smiles, then presses her cheek against his and closes her eyes. Bayam holds her close and kisses her other cheek. Stepping away, he turns to another woman.
Your Honor, Hina.
Your Honor.
Taking his hat and two books from Hiti Hiti, Bayam leaves. Hiti Hiti follows him out, frowning. In front of them, a man carries Bayam's footlocker. Elsewhere on the island, the cook holds the shapely woman's hand as they leave her hut. The seven children file out behind them from oldest to youngest, each of them crying. Now, by the shore, the chief puts a hand on Bayam's arm.
Well, aren't you coming aboard, Hiti Hiti?
Eita, I have said farewell to Bly. I have sent gift to King George.
Then this is goodbye.
Hey, Bayam Tayo, you have been happy here?
Very happy, Hiti Hiti.
Bayam, I have no son. Stay here with me. Be my son.
I must return to England. I shall never come back.
Bayam, you will think of us sometime.
Hiti Hiti.
Bayam puts his hand on his shoulder. They touch cheeks briefly, then shake hands.
Your honor.
Bayam walks away, leaving Hiti Hiti alone. Back at the hut, Tahani gazes down at the music box and smiles gently. She looks off with a faraway gaze, her eyes welling up. A tear rolls slowly down her cheek. On the beach, Christian stands with Mamaiti. She pulls a small item from her bosom and gives it to him.
Koloatu, natooe mama.
With a dimpled smile, he unwraps it.
Roger! Will you come here, please?
He shows Bayam two shiny pearls.
Look! Ooh, big as gooseberries.
Please make her understand. These are priceless. I can't take them.
She says they're for your mother.
Oh. Well, thank her, Roger. And tell her when this voyage is over, somehow I'm coming back.
I can't tell her that.
I mean it, Roger.
But it's a dream, Fletcher. This island isn't real. Not for you and me. It's that ship that's real. It's taking us home.
Tell her, Roger.
Bayam frowns.
Hoi ite maine Christian. Hoi maya ona. Ya, hoi ne.
Thank you, Roger.
Your honor, Mamaiti.
Your honor.
He leaves. Grinning, Christian holds Mamaiti close.
Goodbye, Mamaiti. That's right. No tears, lass.
He kisses her smiling lips.
Love?
Love.
They kiss again.
Goodbye.
Later, on deck.
Reporting with deserter, sir. Taken on the other side of the island. No resistance.
Very well, Mr. Young.
Burkett and others stand subdued.
So you let them take you alive. You'll regret that, my lads. Take them below.
But we ain't deserters, sir. If you please, sir, you kept us aboard because we dropped that tub of breadfruit, sir. We just wanted to see the island, sir, to one
take
day...
Take them below and put them in irons.
Prisoners and escort, into file. Left, turn. Quick, march.
Bly gazes up at the sails.
Ship ready for sea, Mr. Fryle.
Ready for sea, sir.
Set topsails and jibs.
Stand by, topsails and jibs.
Later, the Bounty tosses gently in the waves, traveling at full sail. The shadows of ropes appear on the billowed canvas. On the three masts, sailors climb narrow rope ladders. At the stern, a British flag flaps in a breeze.
All hands on deck!
Christian appears, hurriedly putting on his uniform jacket.
Gentlemen, looking about me, I can't believe we're at sea again in a ship of the Royal Navy. The deck's like a barnyard. Paradise is astern, gentlemen. I'll break the men of that island if I have to flog every scurvy thieving which reminds you of, Mr. Christian. 10 coconuts, crown property, were stolen last night during your watch. Am I correct, Mr. Mayes?
Yes, sir. I counted them myself.
I can account for the men in my watch, sir. They didn't take them.
Can you account for yourself?
Mr. Bly, may I recall the outward voyage? Some harsh things were said then, but I've been hoping the return trip would be more fortunate.
Suppose you return the 10 coconuts.
You don't think I'm so fond of coconuts that I'd steal them, do you?
Yes, you hypocrite, I do. You've already stolen crown property far more valuable.
Explain that.
The pearls, Mr. Christian.
Pearls?
I believe I said pearls. Fortunately, Mr. Maggs was at the boat. He saw that native woman. Give you 2 pearls.
I think I'm beginning to understand. The native woman, as you choose to call her, gave the pearls to me. They are not crown property.
Mr. Christian, the goods I gave away among the natives belong to the crown. Whatever comes back from the natives belongs to the crown.
I'm not the most patient man in the world. Give them to me.
He holds out his hand, palm upturned. Christian reaches into his waistcoat pocket. Taking out the pearls, he narrows his eyes.
Remember, Mr. Bly, Crown property. Very well, Mr. Christian. Crown property.
Bly hands them to Maggs.
Greetings, Rick, sir.
Is everybody present?
Everyone present, sir, but the surgeon.
Huh? The surgeon is ill, sir. Ill drunk, you mean?
We had to bleed him this morning, sir. He's not fit for duty. Mr. Morgan and Mr. Christian will agree.
Go below, tell him to report on deck at once.
Very good, sir.
Thomas Burkett, Matthew Thompson, step forward. Ship's company, off hat.
Below, Byam steps into the surgeon's room.
I'm sorry, sir. Captain Bly, how do you feel?
I'm afraid I'm a very old man, lad. And a very sick one.
I'll tell him again, you're not able to report.
No, boy. No, I'm not worth getting into a scrape over.
For once, a midshipman gives an order. You stay where you are.
A good lad. A good lad. I must pull him out.
On deck, Byam strides toward Bly.
I've taken the liberty of telling the surgeon to remain below, sir. He's really not able to report.
I'll have no drunken relic holding up the discipline aboard my ship. What's more, Mr. Byam, bring him on deck immediately, or I'll take the liberty of having you seized up and flogged.
Mr. Byam doesn't want to disobey your orders. But I beg you, don't make that old man come on deck. He can't even walk. If you don't believe me, go below and see for yourself.
Are you presuming to give me orders?
Reporting on deck for duty, sir.
Wearing his uniform and hat, the old surgeon staggers forward, clinging to the ropes. Bly's gaze shifts, and he turns to Christian, who glares.
Mr. Morrison, do your duty. 4 dozen, I believe.
4 dozen it is, sir.
Morrison lays into Burkett with his whip. Nearby, the surgeon closes his eyes and sinks to the deck. Christian rushes to his side and holds the old man in his arms. His mouth agape, the surgeon slowly shakes his head.
Nothing lost, Mr. Christian.
He goes limp in Christian's arms. All around, the men's hardened gazes turn to their captain. Bly stares at the surgeon.
Well, what could you expect, Mr. Bly? The man's dead.
I call his ship's company to bear witness. You killed him!
Silence. Ship's company dismissed. Bosun, punishment postponed 24 hours.
Aye, aye, sir.
Bly glances around. The men stay put.
Do you hear me? Ship's company dismissed!
Some turn away.
Bear a hand, take him below.
Nearby, a sailor starts to draw a large wooden peg from its hole in the rigging. Another man stares at Bly, clutching the handle of the knife on his belt. Bly paces forward slowly, with his hands clasped behind his back. The men eye him as he approaches and pauses beside them. He casts a cool, sidelong glance at the sailor gripping the peg. The man releases his hold and walks away. Bly paces on. Below, Christian, Byam, and Morgan gently lay the surgeon out on his bed. Morgan stands over him.
Drunkard? Yes, but everybody loved him. The welfare of men on shipboard depends upon things that seem small. A joke at the right moment. A glass of grog. A kind word will do more with seamen than the cat of nine tails. And this ship will be the worse, if possible, for his death.
Christian looks off with a steely-eyed gaze. Nighttime. The Bounty sails off the coast of an island. On deck, Byam joins Christian at the railing.
Roger this, to Four Island. The natives are cannibals. But it's land. The last we'll see for months.
You'd better get some rest, Fletcher. You've been here for hours.
Now I got to sleep. Besides, it's nearly my watch.
Good night.
Roger. There's something I'd like you to do for me.
Gladly. What is it?
One never knows what may happen on a voyage like this. If for any reason I shouldn't return to England, I'd like you to see my parents.
Why shouldn't you return to England?
Why? Because I can't stand this devil's work much longer. One of these days, I'll forget all this discipline and break his neck.
Wait till we're back in England. The Admiralty will save you the trouble.
Well,
In any case, I'd like you to see my parents.
Of course. Where do they live?
In Cumberland, at Main Kadir. I've almost forgotten what the old place looks like. I haven't seen it in 10 years. But I do remember a tapestry in the hall. It's ships and islands on it. Perhaps that's what sent me off to sea. I don't know. Well, in any case, I'd like you to see my home. And if anything should happen, tell my father and mother that you knew me.
You can count on me.
Bly strides over.
Van, you're up late.
It's very warm below, sir.
I hadn't noticed it. True sailor can sleep in an oven if need be, or in a cake of ice, get below.
Very good, sir.
Your watch, Mr. Christian. And I must cut the coconuts.
Christian turns sharply, his jaw set. He shifts his weight, but stays put as Bly walks away. Daytime. Wearing leggings and knee breeches, Christian paces the deck. Lost in thought, he clasps his hands behind his back. A scrawny gray-haired sailor stands at the railing.
Mr. Christensen. That shark's been following us ever since the surgeon died. Waiting for the burial. Couldn't I have a musket to shoot it, sir?
Take the deck, McCoy. I'll get the keys to the arms chest.
Get 2 muskets, sir. I'd like to shoot that shark on board.
McCoy!
It's no use, sir. Now's our chance. There's a lot of us here ready for anything. And the officers and men that won't join us, well, it's them or us.
Keep your hatch closed. I'll get forward.
Ellison, Muspratt, and 2 others stare at him, and he stalks off. Below deck, Mags unlocks an iron box covering a water spigot and holds a bowl under it. Mags goes into the hold where Burkett and Thompson sit in chains.
Hey, what's this noise about here?
Water, mate.
Water? For deserters?
But the lad slipped his cable.
Well, here's to you slipping yours.
When I gets free, I'll wring your scrawny pipe stem till your tongue pops out.
Tongue, is it? I'll give you something to remind you of that slice of shark, you...
At the arms chest, Christian looks up, holding a musket. He finds Mags kicking Burkett and yanks him away.
You scum, get out!
As Mags scrambles off, Christian undoes a chain gagging Burkett. The sailor leans forward wearily, and Christian puts an arm around his shoulders.
I'm sorry, lad.
Are you all right?
Thank you, Mr. Christian, sir. Better take care of Thompson, sir.
Thompson gazes over at him. Then his eyes close and his head lolls to the side. Christian looks the prisoners over, furrowing his brow. His gaze hardens. Clenching his fists, he looks up toward Bly's quarters.
Murdering butcher. Oh, I've had enough of this bloodshed. He's the master of life and death on a quarterdeck above the angels. McCoy! Quill! Damn sick of blood! Bloody bats! Bloody faces! Now you've given your last command on this ship. We'll be men again if we hang for it. So you're ready for anything, eh?
Aye.
Erase those men. You're taking the ship?
You did.
Where were you? Oh, mass mutiny. Pass the word. Seize the arms chest.
At the arms chest, the sailors pass out muskets and some attach bayonets. On deck, midshipman Hayward sleeps with his head on a coil of rope. At the wheel, 2 men grab the helmsman. Hayward wakes as a sailor gets ready to strike him. The sailor pounds him. Now Christian storms toward Bly's cabin with the 2 prisoners. Inside, the captain yawns widely and stretches out his arms. Turning, he finds the men standing in his doorway.
Take him!
The men lunge, and Bly clutches at his desk, squirming as they wrestle him.
Monster!
Thompson claps a hand over his mouth. Elsewhere, a sailor stabs Mags's hand. In the midshipman's cabin, Byam and Stewart sleep.
Get into your clothes and lose no time about it.
What's the matter?
What's happened? Have we been attacked?
No, we've taken this ship.
And old Bly is a prisoner.
Mutiny.
On deck, sailors take out the wooden pegs used to hang rope. One sailor hurls a peg at another, taking him down. Another sailor slashes a man. All over the deck, the men fight hand to hand. At the top of a mast, a burly man shoves a sailor from the yard beam. He falls to the deck, his mouth bloody. On the shrouds, men chase each other up the ropes. On deck, Christian leads the sailors, holding Bly. They bind Bly to the base of a mast.
Mr. Morrison! Mr.
Fryer.
Mr. Christian, give up this madness or we'll all be murdered.
You're in no danger.
Sailors surround Bly.
Lads, what'll we do with them?
Shoot him!
I'll slit his dirty throat.
See that, you butcher? My 4 dozen. We'll give you 400. We let you know what it feels like.
Flog him!
Break the cat!
You old rogue.
You'd flog us, would you? You'd make us eat grass.
You blue-nosed baboon.
Christian pushes forward.
Back all of you! We'll have no more flogging aboard this ship. That's why we're taking it.
We'll have something to say about that. What are you going to do with him?
Put him in a launch and cast him adrift. We'll give him food and water, compasses and a compass. Every one of you can have your choice. Go with him or stay with me.
No. Slit his throat, I say, and feed him to the sharks.
And I say go for it. Clear the launch and lower away.
Burkett nods.
Aye, sir.
Stand by, Thompson.
In the hold, now with Morgan.
Now, Thompson Beans.
What a pity. What a pity. Every little tree perfect. You'll be sure to water them, won't you?
Never you fret. We'll water them.
The sailor spits on one. Later, on deck, a half dozen officers and sailors sit in the launch, and others climb down to join them. The men on deck shove mags to the ladder. Christian stops a young midshipman.
Sheriff Morgan!
You may stay on board if you like without joining us. No, thank you, sir. All right. Your turn, Mr. Bly.
Bly jerks free and paces toward Christian.
Mr. Christian, I give you your last chance to return to duty.
I'll take my chance against the law. You'll take yours against the sea.
But you're taking my ship. My ship?
Your ship. The king's ship, you mean. And you're not fit to command it. Into the boat.
Bly glares at him, then turns sharply and heads down the ladder. The sailors crowd the railing to watch. In the midshipman's cabin, Stewart and Byam pack supplies.
We're ready, Churchill. Bear a hand here, will you?
A burly sailor steps in. They grab him, and his musket fires into the air.
McCoy!
Other sailors arrive and knock the midshipman out.
Two little monkey jackets. Loyal to Captain Bly, eh?
Serves him right.
Come on, lads, on deck.
Now Morrison and another man run to Christian.
I tell you we will.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Christian, you've forgotten us, sir. Hold back the boat.
I'm sorry, Morrison. There's no more room. You must stay with us.
Loose, we'll join our captain.
Aye, we're not mutineers.
I said there was no more room. Take him below.
At the stern, others gather to heckle the launch as it trails behind the Bounty on a rope. More than a dozen men sit in the small craft.
Stand the guns on him!
Give him a bit of a crate!
In the launch, Fryer hacks through the rope, setting them loose.
Casting me adrift, 3,500 miles from a port of call. You're sending me to my doom, eh? Well, you're wrong, Christian! I'll take this boat as she floats to England if I must. I'll live to see you, all of you, hanging from the highest yardarm in the British fleet.
Yardarms, is it? I'll give you yardarms.
Burkett takes aim, but Christian grabs the musket and knocks him over. The men on the launch raise a sail, while on the Bounty, Byam comes up on deck and finds Christian.
Fletcher, you're not leaving them adrift. They'll starve or drown.
That's Bly's affair now.
But the others, your friends, Morgan, Purcell,
Kid. Do you think I don't know? Do you think I wanted this?
Then call back the boat.
No.
Call it back!
No! These men have been in hell for weeks. I couldn't stand it any longer.
Then I must go with Bly.
There's no room by him.
Then I call on you men. All of you. In the name of the king, return to duty.
Cock-a-doodle-doo!
Bly grabs a man's gun.
Give me that jacket.
Christian punches him, knocking him down. With a stunned gaze, he stares at Byam.
Take him below. Stand by to wear ship.
What course, sir?
West, northwest. Tahiti.
Tahiti, lad!
Christian stands still, lost in thought. Later, sailors toss breadfruit plants out the stern gallery. They cast one pot after another overboard. A long trail of breadfruit plants bobs along the sea. Later, Christian descends steep stairs from the deck to the midshipman's quarters. Inside, Byam holds a cloth to his head, frowning. Christian steps in and Byam rises, keeping his back to the door.
Sit down, Roger.
He remains standing and takes a restless step.
You know, there are five other men on board who refuse to take part in the mutiny. They've agreed not to try and retake the ship. You may have your liberty under the same conditions. I simply want your word for it.
You may have it. But I'll escape if I can.
I understand.
That I may go?
Yes, you may go.
Roger.
I'm sorry I had to hit you.
Byam meets his gaze. He shakes his head.
That didn't hurt. What hurts is that you and I can never again be friends.
He leaves. Christian sits alone, staring at the empty doorway. Now, on the open seas, spray rises from a stormy swell. The launch rides the waves, with its sails unfurled. At the tiller, Fryer sits beside Bligh.
Deeper as she goes, west nor-west, Mr. Fryer.
West nor-west, sir. I presume, sir, you'll make for the nearest island.
No, that's certain death, lads. The savages in these parts are fierce and treacherous cannibals. We must keep well clear of those fellows. By my reckoning, the first port from which we can expect help is Timor in the Dutch East Indies, some 3,500 miles away.
Then our case is hopeless.
It is by no means hopeless, Mr. Fryer. We have extra canvas, rope, tool chest. We put on every rag of sail this boat will carry.
That's impossible, sir. Deeply laden as we are, we'd fill with the first storm.
Then we'll bail with our hands if we must. She'll see us through if we do our part. By the eternal, she will.
Begging your pardon, sir, but the food and the water, we haven't got enough for 10 days.
If we are to reach Timor alive, we must make it last 20, 40, 50 days. It's the sea against us.
Mr. Bligh, we'd be pleased if you'd ask God's blessing on our journey.
That I shall do, Mr. Fryer. Almighty God, thou knowest our need. Grant that we may quit ourselves like men in the trials and dangers that lie before us.
Later, in a storm, water washes across the launch as it navigates the towering waves. The men bail furiously as Bligh holds fast to the tiller. He grits his teeth. Water blows across the launch, knocking men over. Spray blasts over them. As the men bail, the launch tosses and rolls on the waves. It dips into a valley between waves and disappears behind a swell. Daytime. Bligh writes in a log, 27th day. Contrary winds. Have fished constantly with success. Bread allowance cut again. Later, looking haggard, he weighs bread in a scale made of coconut shells.
Another piece, Mr. Maggs. Thank you.
He takes a coconut shell for himself.
Thank you, lad. Are we all served?
All served, sir.
Now, lads, for your own good, eat and drink slowly.
Bligh raises his shell and drinks steadily. Maggs turns to him.
How far have we still to go, sir?
Don't let your mind dwell upon that, lad. Think how far we've come.
We'll never see Portsmouth again, sir.
Now we'll see Portsmouth again. And we'll see Fletcher Christian hanging from a yardarm. And every pirate with him.
Another log entry reads, 39th day. Bread and water cut below amount necessary to sustain life. Men have been trying for days to kill seabirds with oars. No success. Later, gulls circle over the launch. On board, the men gaze desperately at the sky. One of the young midshipmen grips an oar.
Steady, mate. Steady.
He strikes, and a gull falls. The men fight over it. Bligh squeezes through the fray and grabs the live bird away from the men.
Hey, give me that bird!
Share and share alike, lads. Blood for the sick.
He goes to Morgan.
Raise him up, Mr. Maggs. Norton, get me a cup. This will not issue, Mr. Morgan.
No. Thank you, sir. Give it to the youngsters. They need it more.
Yes, Mr. Morgan, but I am still giving the orders.
He stoops over the bird. Now another log entry. 45th day. Have made this day by log 3,600 miles. No sign of Timor. No food, no water. Have no recourse but in prayer to Almighty God for deliverance. The men lie about the boat, their chests sunken and their skin tanned from the sun. At the stern, Bligh stares ahead, leaning heavily on the tiller. One of his eyes is swollen and nearly shut. A scruffy beard covers his cheeks. He straightens slightly and peers into the distance. A strip of land appears through a haze on the horizon. Working his dry lips, he tries to speak.
Timber on the edge! Timber!
The men begin to stir.
Up with you. Up with you.
They sit up and follow his gaze over the bow. Morgan rises to his knees and gapes. Trembling, he looks to Bligh, then makes his way forward to the bow. Bligh leans on the tiller, gazing ahead.
We've beaten the sea itself.
Now, in England, at the home of Mrs. Byam.
I'm after you. Roger, it's a nice Christmas, Mum.
Thank you, Simmons.
Well, good night, Mum.
Good night.
Good night, ma'am.
I beg pardon, ma'am. Will there be anything more?
Nothing more, Burroughs.
Thank you.
Mrs. Byam stands alone by her Christmas tree. Now in Tahiti. The mutineers stand together, gazing at the ground. Ellison's lips quiver as he sings. His eyes fill with tears. Byam stands apart from the group with Tahani.
Christmas?
Yes, Christmas. Peace on earth, goodwill.
A smile grows on his lips, and he looks to Tahani, who returns a brilliant grin.
Come along.
In a hut, a woman rocks a bassinet decked with flowers. Nearby, Christian listens to the men, then pulls Mamaiti close with a smile.
A Merry Christmas to you, Mrs. Christian.
She smiles, and they share a kiss. Christian swings open the front door.
Thank you, lads.
He looks out over the group with a wide grin.
A Merry Christmas to you all.
Same to you, sir.
Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Christian, sir.
Won't you come?
He spots Byam. He rushes over and shakes Byam's hand warmly.
Roger.
Merry Christmas, Fletcher.
Oh, thanks, lad. I've been hoping for this for a year. Come in. This is a day worth celebrating.
That's good.
Begging your pardon, sir. We've brought the little lady a bit of Christmas.
Ellison holds a model ship.
Well, thanks, lad. But she must have it from you. Come in. Come in, lads, all of you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
All right.
They follow Christian into his hut, where the nursemaid stands beside the bassinet, which hangs on ropes from the rafters. A plump, dark-haired baby lies in it, sucking her fingers. Tahani and Byam exchange a glance, and Ellison places the little ship beside her.
My boy was like that when I left home, sir. He'd be 3 years old now.
His smile fades. And Christian pats his shoulder.
Come on, lads. Everybody outside for some grog.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Sweet baby.
Outside, Christian hands out bottles.
Help yourself, lads.
Thank you, sir.
Give me one, man. Thank you, sir.
The surgeons, Roger. It'd light his soul to have us drink it, especially on this day.
Friend. Good? Good.
Ah, heady, heady. Here.
Makes that go round, round.
Come on, Burns!
The men beckon Ellison, who stands alone near the hut. Breaking into a smile, he joins them and starts to dance a jig. Wearing his wide-leg sailor's pants, he springs from foot to foot. The island women giggle. With his hands on his hips, he skips backward in a circle. Byam and Christian laugh together. Later, at a lagoon surrounded by trees, Mamaiti runs to the water's edge and dives in. On the bank, Christian lies down nearby him on a patch of grass with shadows of leaves. Reaching up, Christian grabs two bananas from a branch and sets one on his friend's bare chest. They peel them and eat. Overhead, the fronds of palm trees sway gently in a breeze. Mamaiti and Tahani skip from the lagoon and lie down, snuggling close to their men. Elsewhere, a young Tahitian man shields his eyes from the sun as he gazes out to sea. He raises a conch shell to his lips. Another man runs to the lagoon. Christian and Bayam run off toward the coast with the women close behind. Later, dozens of islanders run from the forest and point out to sea, where a ship appears on the horizon. Christian peers through a telescope.
Maybe she's Spanish.
No, she's British, Rick.
British.
The sailors gape.
British, British, British.
She's coming for us. We've got a chance. The wind's against her. She just lay outside the reef till morning.
Get your families and your goods together. Get aboard the Bounty at once.
Later, men and women gather on the beach. Just offshore, the Bounty floats at anchor. Holding her baby in her arms, Mamaiti touches cheeks with Tahani, then with Bayam as she heads for a dinghy. Christian approaches.
Thompson, everyone on board?
All but Burkett and Muspratt, sir. They've gone into our dinghy.
Tell all the fools they'll be taken and hanged. Get in the boat.
Ellison.
Where are you taking us, sir?
I don't know yet, lad. The Pacific is filled with uncharted islands. We'll find one and settle there for good.
Mr. Christian, I've got a wife and child in England. I've got to get back.
Back? You know what that means? A yardarm.
I must take that chance, sir. But whatever happens, I'll never blame you.
Thanks, lad. And I understand. Good luck.
He shakes his hand, then turns to Bayam.
Well, this is goodbye, youngster. We'll never see each other again, that's certain. But I'll remember.
I will too, Fletcher.
When you're back in England with the fleet again, you'll hear the hue and cry against me. From now on, they'll spell mutiny with my name. I regret that. But not the taking of the ship. Every time I think of Bly, well, I'd do it again.
If ever I reach England again, I'll go to your father and tell him the truth.
Thanks. I'll be happier knowing that.
Fletcher, what is out there for you?
Another island?
He puts his arm around Bayam and heads for the dinghy. Christian climbs in with the others, then gives Bayam a last hearty handshake as they shove off. As the islanders push the boat out over the breaking waves, Bayam stays behind on the beach. Christian turns and waves, and Bayam holds up his hand in farewell. Now words appear. No one on the island thought of sleep that night. Watchfires were lighted to await the coming of the strange English ship. Daytime. At the edge of the woods near the beach, Tehane stands with Chief Hitihiti. She spots something and points. On the beach, Bayam and Stewart run a canoe into the water.
Stand by, Stewart. I'll be back in a moment.
He goes to Tahani and Hitihiti.
When she comes around the headland, we're going to pilot her in.
Hi, Tahani.
Oh, Tahani. I'll be back in 2 hours.
Tahani knows.
My boy. The ship may be here for months before she sails.
But she will sail.
Bayam, midshipman. Tahani knows.
He hugs her.
You're my wife, always. Mrs. Roger Bayam. My wife, my darling.
As the strange British ship rounds the headlands, a man in a tree makes a signal. Bayam glances toward the sea, then quickly kisses Tahani and dashes off to the canoe. Nearby, three other sailors gaze out at the ship.
Yes, she's lands, and we've nothing to fear. We took no part in the mutiny, and soon we'll be in England. Thank God! Thank God!
Out at the British ship, Byam and Stewart climb aboard, grinning. An officer approaches.
Peritani. Good, eh?
Very good, sir. My name's Byam, Roger Byam. This is Mr. Stewart. We're midshipmen, late of His Majesty's ship Bounty.
Bring those men up!
It's Bly, in captain's uniform. Byam runs to meet him.
Captain Bly, thank God you're alive, sir.
They gave me a boat and a sail, didn't they? Where is Fletcher Christian?
He sailed yesterday, sir, when your ship was sighted.
Weto!
I don't know, sir.
You don't know, Stewart?
I don't know either, sir.
You're lying, both of you. Sergeant, put these men in irons.
Irons? What for?
Mutiny.
But we're not mutineers, sir.
A court-martial in England will decide that.
But we're as loyal as you, sir.
A court-martial in England will decide that.
But we're reporting for duty. If we'd been guilty, we'd have gone with Christian.
Byam, when Christian took my ship, you remained with him, and you'll have to answer for it with him. It'll be better for you to tell me where he's gone.
We don't know, sir.
Then you lie in the hold until you do know. Sergeant, take him below.
Words appear. Securing all the seamen left on the island, Captain Bly sailed in pursuit of Fletcher Christian. He drove his frigate, the Pandora, on and on through the uncharted and treacherous reefs of the Great South Sea. Later, the three-masted Pandora sails rough seas. Wind whips spray from the crest of a tall wave that breaks beside the ship. On board, Bly stands at the helm.
By the mark 12, rocky bottom.
Come on, lee helm.
Lee helm, sir.
Two sailors steer.
Mark 12! Port up, any sail in sight?
No sail, sir.
Main top!
No sail, sir. By the mark 12, reefs ahead.
Bly gazes out at the seething waves. Below in the hold, the captured men sit in chains, clothed in tatters.
Mr. Byam, I can't understand why he keeps us below here in irons. You and Mr. Stewart, McIntosh, Coleman, Byrne, and myself. We are no mutineers.
Haven't I told him that time and time again?
His marines surprised me and Muspratt, sir, or we wouldn't be here.
Alive. Reefs ahead.
Attention below.
The prisoners rise. Bly descends the narrow steps.
Have you decided to tell me, any one of you, where Christian sailed for?
They stand with their heads bowed.
Reefs ahead.
Well, I'm waiting.
Byam gazes sullenly at him.
I'll stay here and rot.
Bly climbs back up the steps. Now the prow of the HMS Bounty pierces a thick fog as the ship glides slowly through placid water. On board, the Tahitians and sailors peer through the fog.
Well watched, I believe, Mr. Christian.
Very well, Mr. Young.
Further along the deck, two women dance, twisting their hands and rocking their hips. Thompson grabs one and kisses her. The drummer leaps up and pries her away.
Hello, out!
You heathen slime!
Christian breaks them up.
Atira.
I'm sorry, sir. Mr. Christian, sir, when are you going to make a landfall? We're fair sick of this, sir. It's more than man can stand to be at sea forever in a ghost ship.
Well, I've steered off the track of ships, lads. When I think it's safe, I'll put about for the island. Until then, you've got to trust me, that's all.
Now on the Pandora, a sailor hangs over the rail, keeping watch.
Here, beloved Rocky Bottom!
I beg you again to give up the search. The Bounty must be lost, sir. The ship's dragging barnacles. The seams are open. I've got the men working the pumps day and night.
We're still afloat, are we not?
Under
the grace of God and these reefs.
He's an alpha point.
He's an alpha point, sir.
I must remind you, sir, that this is one of His Majesty's ships.
Mr. Edwards, I intend to bring back Fletcher Christian. Unless we see him hanging from a yardarm, not one of His Majesty's ships is safe. Mutiny and piracy will be rampant in the fleet.
But we'll lose the ship.
Then we'll lose it. As long as I have a deck under me, I'll search for that man. Aboard, ten!
As the officer leaves, Bly stares fiercely ahead. In the hold, the men look out portholes.
Old Bly's a seaman, Burnham. The rocks are so thick, a fish couldn't swim between them without rubbing off his tail.
Mark, eight!
8 fathoms! It's open water before night, mate, so the sharks will have us.
Byam sits with Stewart, who slumps wearily against a crate. The ship starts to heel. The ship tilts violently, and water pours in through the portholes. On deck, a yard topples, and men leap down from the rigging. The officer finds Bly. A uniformed drummer stands on deck as the sailors work to free two launches. A loose beam falls and dangles from the ropes. Below deck, the hold fills with water, and the prisoners yank desperately at their chains. One man's eyes widen in a horrified stare.
Get us out! We'll drown!
Above, sailors slide down the tilted deck. In the hold. On deck, the men swing a launch out over the railing. Below, water rushes in, rising to the prisoners' knees. Three sailors descend into the hold. On deck, men pile into one of the launches. Below, a sailor waits to be freed.
Hurry up, soldier!
Ellison gapes as a man hammers away at his chains. They break open. On deck, the officer finds Bly.
Take command, Mr. Edwards. Make for the Australian coast. Prisoners go with me in the other boat.
Very good, sir. Coming with you.
Coming with you, Mr. Edwards. Hurry up, will you, down there?
The prisoners and sailors climb from the waist-high water to the deck, and Bly waves them toward the launch. Another sailor grabs the drummer's arm and throws him into the launch, too. Wading across the swamped deck, the prisoners climb over fallen beams and ropes. Byam turns to Bly.
Thank you, sir. You've saved our lives.
Mr. Byam, I wouldn't lose you for a flagship. Get into the boat.
Waves pummel the launch as the last few men climb aboard. Later, the men aboard the launch pull two others from the water as they drift away from the Pandora. Another yardarm topples onto the sinking frigate's deck. Later, in a harbor, men row a launch toward a cluster of anchored ships. On a pier, Ellison's mother waits with his wife and five-year-old son.
How long has this trial been going on?
About a week now. They should reach a verdict soon.
Oh, there, child.
But they won't let me see him. Why won't they let me see him? If only I could see him to talk to him, he'd know I trust him.
He knows that, darling.
Oh, but it's cruel. Cruel. They can't hang him.
There's a signal. The trial is open again.
Aboard a ship.
On the 15th day of September, 1792, for mutiny on His Majesty's ship, Bounty.
Call Mr. Fryer. Mr. Fryer.
The guard steps aside, and the elderly officer enters, taking off his hat. Darting a glance at Byam, he approaches the panel.
You swear by Almighty God that in the evidence...
Later.
As the leader, did you see any of the prisoners now before this court in arms?
Yes, my lord.
Inform the court.
Seaman Burkett and Seaman Muspratt were armed with muskets. Seaman Ellison was armed with a bayonet.
Have any of the accused any questions to put to this witness?
Yes, my lord.
Ellison rises. Smiling, he salutes.
Morning, Mr. Fryer.
Oh, good morning, lad.
Mr. Fryer, you say I was armed with a bayonet. Did you see me use it?
By no means, lad. By no means.
Address your replies to the court.
My lord, he didn't use the bayonet. He merely flourished it under Captain Bly's nose and called him a few names.
Names? What names did he call him?
Sir, he called him a blue-nosed baboon.
Have you any more questions to ask the witness?
No, my lord.
That is all.
My lord, I should like to ask a few questions of Captain Bly.
Very well, Captain Nelson.
Call Captain Bly.
Captain Bly.
Bly enters, wearing his full uniform. A cutlass hangs at his side, and brass buttons trim his cutaway coat. He bows slightly.
Captain Bly, in the previous evidence given before this court, you failed to make clear one very important point, namely, a motive for the mutiny. Can you tell us why your men took your ship from you?
No, sir. Until I was seized in the cabin, I suspected nothing. The circumstance occurred on the night before the mutiny, which should have aroused my suspicions. going on deck, I found Fletcher Christian and Roger Byam talking together at the rail. I heard Roger Byam say, "You can count on me." I heard Christian reply, "Good, that's settled then." I saw them shake hands. I realized afterwards that they were plotting to seize the Bounty.
But that's not true, Captain Bligh. My lord, gentlemen, let me explain.
If the prisoner so desires, he may question the witness.
Captain Bligh, you've not repeated my whole talk with Fletcher Christian. Did you not hear him tell me about his home in Cumberland?
I did not.
Well, did you not hear him ask my promise that if for any reason he did not return, I would go to his parents and tell them what had happened?
I did not.
My lord, I swear before God and before this court, that was the content of my talk with Fletcher Christian. It had nothing whatever to do with mutiny.
Captain Bligh, apart from the conversation you overheard, was Mr. Byam's previous conduct such that you believe him guilty?
Sir, his entire conduct convinces me that he plotted with Christian. They were friends before the mutiny. They remained friends after the mutiny. When I arrived at the island, the prisoner had it in his power to arrest Christian, but he allowed him to escape on his own admittance.
Mr. Captain Bligh, you knew I was trapped on the island, perhaps for years, outnumbered, unarmed. I gave my word to Christian, along with the other loyal men, not to move against him.
Mr. Byam, if you were loyal when Christian escaped, I should have found you dead.
Lord, I have nothing more to ask him. I can only say again to this court, I am not guilty of mutiny.
If that is so, why did you not join your captain when he was cast adrift?
Sir, I was below deck, planning a counterattack to regain the ship from the mutineers.
With whom did you plan the attack?
Sir, with my messmate, Midshipman Stewart.
My lord, Midshipman Stewart died in the Pandora's boat.
Later, in the hold of the courtship, Muspratt, Byam, and the others sit on benches. Thompson reads a small Bible.
Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
He glances upward, then continues reading, his lips forming the words. Watery moonlight flickers on the walls as Burkett paces.
Can't they ever reach a verdict? I'm that sick of waiting I could stamp on a litter of wildcats and never feel a scratch.
Nearby, Ellison gazes out a porthole.
Well, what are you looking at? It ain't Tahiti. It's only Portsmouth.
I thought she might row by in a boat.
Who? The Queen?
No. My wife.
Sorry, lad.
Why can't I see her? My wife. My boy. That's all I've come back for. I knew they'd hang me.
But I've got to see them. I've got to see them. Blast these sea captains. Who might the sea law? God didn't. The burning killers!
Byam grabs him.
We're all in the same boat, Tom. They won't let me see my mother. Won't you help us now by holding on?
Yes, sir.
Byam pats his shoulder. Uniformed men enter.
Roger Byam?
He steps forward.
Follow me, please.
Outside, Sir Joseph waits in the hall.
Sir Joseph?
My lad, they've reached the verdict. Watch the dirk.
The dirk?
A midshipman's dirk will be lying on the table before Lord Hood. If it lies crosswise, you've been acquitted. If the point lies toward you, you've been condemned. God be with you.
Thank you, sir.
Guards march Byam to the courtroom. On the table, a dagger lies with its point facing him.
Prisoner in escort, halt! Left, halt!
Have you anything to say before the sentence of this court is passed upon you?
Byam gapes at the dirk, then looks up.
Lord, much as I desire to live, I'm not afraid to die. Since I first sailed on the Bounty over 4 years ago, I've known how men can be made to suffer worse things than death. Cruelly. Beyond duty. Beyond necessity. Captain Bligh, you've told your story of mutiny on the Bounty. How men plotted against you, seized your ship, cast you adrift in an open boat. A great venture in science brought to nothing. Two British ships lost. But there's another story, Captain Bligh. A 10 coconuts and 2 cheeses. A story of a man who robbed his seamen,
curse them, flog them. Not to punish, but to break their spirit. A story of greed and tyranny and of anger against it, of what it cost. One man, my lord, would not endure such tyranny. That's why you hounded him. That's why you hate him, hate his friends. And that's why you're beaten. Fletcher Christian still free. But Christian lost too, my lord. God knows he's judged himself more harshly than you could judge him. I say to his father, he was my friend. No finer man ever lived. I don't try to justify his crime, his mutiny, but I condemn the tyranny that drove him to it. I don't speak here for myself alone, nor for these men you've condemned. I speak in their names, in Fletcher Christian's name, for all men at sea. These men don't ask for comfort. They don't ask for safety. If they could speak to you, they'd say, let us choose to do our duty willingly. Not the choice of a slave, but the choice of free Englishmen. They ask only the freedom that England expects for every man. If one man among you believed that, one man, he could command the fleets of England. He could sweep the seas for England. If he called his men to their duty not by flaying their backs, but by lifting their hearts.
He bows his head.
That's all.
An officer steps forward with a document and stands beside Byam.
Roger Byam, midshipman. Having heard the evidence produced in support of the charges against you and having heard your own defense, the sentence of this court is that you shall suffer death by hanging on board such of His Majesty's ships of war and at such time as the commissioners for executing the office of Lord High Admiral of Great Britain and Ireland shall direct.
Byam stares straight ahead.
Britain escort, in the file.
At the table, one of the silver-haired captains shakes his head as they all rise.
I pronounce this court dissolved.
Taking their hats and white gloves, the captains file out with the spectators. To one side, Bligh stands alone. He approaches the admiral.
My lord, may I congratulate the court?
Captain Bligh, in my opinion, your open boat voyage was the most remarkable conduct of navigation in the history of the sea. I must admire your seamanship and courage, but...
He glances down at Bligh's extended hand and brushes past.
Detachment, fall in!
The guards leave. Later, in the hold, Byam, Burkitt, and Muspratt wait together. A guard brings in Ellison.
Thanks, mate.
The guard nods. Smiling, Ellison goes to Byam.
I've seen him, sir. Thanks to you and your friends. The wife, she's well, sir. And the boy, blow me, I hardly knew him. He's growed so. And you wouldn't believe it. The dead spit of me.
I'm glad, Tom.
Look, sir.
A scarf.
Like the one she gave me the day we sailed for Tahiti. Do you know, sir, that sailing seems like a dream. As far away as the islands are. I remember how Mr. Christian talked to me that day. Cheered me up, he did. Where do you think he is now, sir?
I'd give anything to know. One thing's certain, he's taken that ship beyond maps. I wonder if he found his island.
Now the HMS Bounty sails off a rocky coast. From a launch pulled alongside the ship, Fletcher Christian climbs aboard.
Well, sir, what did you find?
Your new home, lads. There she is, Pitcairn's Island.
There's no anchorage, sir. No place to land.
That's why I chose it. It's my plan to run the Bounty in head-on, salvage what we can, and then burn her.
Burn her? We'd be fools to burn this ship, sir.
We'll be fools if we don't. If there's one spar left inside, we'll never be safe.
Mr. Christian, we can't burn the ship.
We can never get back, sir.
There's no way back, lad. Once we go ashore, we're there to stay.
But this ship's our last tie we're home, sir. Yon's a lonely rock to die on.
It's enough to live on. There's sun and earth and water there. That island can be a hell or a home as we choose to make it.
God help us, sir. We'll remember this as long as we live and regret it.
And remember why we took this ship. They can't press gang you there. They can't starve you. And they can't flog you. We're not afraid of a new life anywhere. As long as we can live it with decency and self-respect, we can and we must. For ourselves and our children. Well, hands for burning.
I say burn her hull and sticks.
Aye, aye, sir.
Very well. We'll get the women and children ashore, and then stand by to take her in.
Aye, sir. Aye, aye.
Later, in a gale wind, the Bounty speeds toward the island at full sail. It veers toward a jetty of jagged rocks, and the bow crashes over it with a spray of water. That night, the sailors and the Tahitians watch the ship burn. Flames lick over the stern, engulfing the name Bounty. Christian stands with Mamaiti, who watches somberly, holding their baby. A sailor joins them.
She makes a grand light, sir.
Good English yoke.
Now in England with Sir Joseph.
The mutineers who confessed have been punished. But we are here to plead for the life of Roger Byam because we believe him innocent. And there is more at stake here, Your Majesty, than his life. We feel we do not exaggerate when we say that a new understanding between officers and men has come to the fleet. By returning Byam to duty, Your Majesty will confirm that understanding. And not for today only, but for all time to come.
Now, in formal script, a letter begins in response to the earnest appeal of Sir Joseph Banks and of Lord Hood, Admiral of the Blue, and President of the court-martial by which Roger Byam has been tried. Now, aboard a ship, a captain approaches a senior officer.
Mr. Edwards, everyone on board?
The last shoreboat's just coming alongside, sir.
Make ready for sea.
Very good, sir.
Aye, sir.
Byam comes aboard and salutes an officer.
Ship ready for sea, sir.
Very good, Mr. Edwards.
Midshipman Byam reporting for duty, sir.
You take the business, Mr. Byam.
Very good, sir.
Very glad to have you with us, lad.
Thank you, sir.
May I, Byam?
They shake hands.
Of course. They're off to the Mediterranean, lad. We'll sweep the seas for England.
Mr. Edwards walks away. Another midshipman passes and shakes Byam's hand. Byam grins and looks over the ship. Byam's ship and two others head out to sea with the sun shining on their tall sails. Words appear. The end. Fade to black. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH, Boston. Described by Christina Faust. Read by Peter Haydu. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Credits roll. Cast: Charles Lawton as Bly, Clark Gable as Christian, Franchot Tone as Byam, Eddie Quillen as Ellison, Donald Crisp as Burkett, Henry Stevenson as Sir Joseph Banks, Movita as Tehani, Mamo as Mamaiti, Douglas Walton as Stewart, Ian Wolfe as Mags, DeWitt Jennings as Friar, Ivan Simpson as Morgan, Vernon Downing as Hayward, William Bambridge as Heaty Heaty, Stanley Fields as Muspratt, and others. Fade to black.